This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the big show on the big station of TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and it is a big show. I made it in. So many questions of whether I'd make it in or not, and I didn't know myself. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day. The Winnipeg Jets host Central Division rivals the Dallas Stars tonight at Bell MTS Place. Full coverage on the big show, the Don Vito Roundtable, and then, of course, the afternoon ride live from Boston Pizza City Place with Hustler and Rick Ralph, 3 till 6. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from BP City Place as well with Mr. Kevin Olszewski and friends. The Jets and the Stars, 7 o'clock puck drop tonight with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call on TSN 1290. And then the Huron Windows postgame show from Boston Pizza City Place. We'll wrap it all up for you, and the Boston Pizza fan line will be open during the post-game show. It will be open today at 9. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. The Bombers and Dan LeFevre and what we expect as they head into Calgary. Also, as we said, lots on the Jets and the Stars and the National Hockey League. The World Series was won last night. The World Series! Woo! Two chances for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. Robin Black is going to talk some MMA with us. Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com. Dennis Bayak will talk Jets. Jeff Reinbold as Week 9 in the NFL gets underway this evening as well. And David Pagnata from TheFourthPeriod.com. And, of course, your phone calls and your NHL news and notes. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Well, we all know that you're on, you know, your seventh heaven or whatever. Somehow, strangely, you're an Astros fan. You're like one of maybe three or four people in this city. But ultimately, man, for people, for most of us, not much skin in the World Series watching the Astros and the Dodgers go at it. And just in the first six games, for the most part, treated to a fantastic, tightly contested series. And then by nature, a game seven, it sort of leads to added anticipation and excitement for drama, of which there was none of yesterday. That just sucked, right? I always pray for game sevens, even if I'm cheering for a team, just for the intensity of it. And you, Darvish, peed all over that intensity in a jiff. Like, I was just getting settled, ready to eat, and it's 2-0 Astros already. I am getting my food on the table and getting my iced tea all stirred up and stuff. And Darvish is falling apart right off the out of the gate. So it was something I was so looking forward to, and it was going to be so majestic and holding my breath between pitches deep in the seventh and eighth innings. And it just was like blah right out of the gate. So congratulations to you, Mr. Toth.
I don't know what you're talking about. I thought the game was riveting, and I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. Every pitch, I was like, no, not there. What are you doing? That's too insane.
I wonder, too, how many World Series, like a fan of a team has watched in the past where they're up by four in the clinching game, and it's cruise control from, like, the fifth inning on. But in this one where you legitimately have to, like, even in the ninth inning, it's like, I wouldn't let anybody get on base. Yes. Like, so never mind how we're feeling. We got to know what's going on in that melon right now.
Well, it's a Jets game day, so I'm excited for that. I always like covering the Jets in the game. I was thinking this last night because
seems like an unnecessary reminder to the boss that you're here for something.
Well, I just want to make sure we are going to get to that. It's not about me and it's not about the Astros today, of course. But being a journalist for over 20 years and covering sports, I love doing it. But I'm rarely covering any team that I actually, you know, I'm a fan of or have grown up liking. So I'm thinking last night, and I'm off the grid. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on my phone. And I'm just watching this game intently.
Naked?
And it's been 20... No.
Naked with your ball cap on.
Okay, ball cap. Okay.
I did have the ball cap on. I did have a... As I said, it's a Jets game. Let's just get to it. No, but it's... you're still a sports fan. That's how we get into this business, and that's how we grow up. And it's been 28 years since one of the teams I've cheered for since I was a child
has won a championship.
Oh, yeah? That's pretty funny.
And the Astros have never done it. So I remember the last time it was when the Flames in 89, and I was in high school, and I spent that summer as if I had won the Stanley Cup, buying Advil every second day. 85, the Bears won, and 82, 83, the Sixers. So, but it wasn't an exciting game. But I've told this story before. I was a child. My grandfather's family came from Ireland to just outside Kansas City, St. Joseph. 18 brothers and sisters. Jeez. Turns 18, and he and his 19-year-old brother moved to Alberta, buy farms, and grew up there. So he's a Royals fan. And one of his sisters, whom when you have 18 brothers and sisters, you barely know.
18 brothers and sisters.
Becomes a nun and works in Houston. And just because she knows I've got these siblings all over and barely know some of them because I left, you know, when some of them were children, but knew my grandfather, Eugene Thomas Long, was the side of the Ryan Reynolds family.
Can we talk about
wait. Yeah, I don't know.
Like that's good for them. That's a sport.
Hey, right. good for great grandpa.
Holy
But anyways, long story short, would send him Astro stuff knowing he was a baseball fan, diehard Royals fan. And so he would open these packages and literally look at me with this orange and brown Astros hat and go, here you go. Because he had Royals hat. And we would sit and watch baseball. I watched the last time the Dodgers were in the World Series when Kirk Gibson. I remember watching the A's World Series with my grandfather. I remember watching Dan Quisenberry win the World Series for the Royals and what it did to my grandfather then. Huh. And he passed away of cancer when I was still in high school. And I just, like, it just took me back to from the time he handed me an Astros cap when I didn't even know what it was all the way to last night. I understand sports fans. I get Jets fans. I get Bombers fans, how they wait and they pray and they you know, not live and die, but every breath is around their teams. And it just brought me back to, you know, a fan perspective, which I try to sort of just, you know, keep, as a journalist covering sports and everything else, professional. But last night I was pretty giddy. And I sat down when it was all said and done, and I was nervous right to the end, right to the last pitch, opened a cold one. And by the time I went to bed, there was about five or six empty cans in front of me. I didn't even realize it, just watching the celebration, watching it all come in. So we'll talk a little World Series in the next segment, just get our thoughts on the game itself and the Dodgers and where they go from here and everything else in Major League Baseball. But it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. And back to the professional side of my life, I'm really excited to see this game. I think this is intriguing. I think it's going to be a good matchup. And I think this is one of the teams in the Central, as we discussed yesterday, all of them are going to be tough. And we discussed that all these teams in the Central could literally be tied at the end of the regular season. But this one with Dallas, who, as Paul Maurice really said yesterday, made a lot of the same changes or four major changes like the Jets did themselves to get themselves in the playoffs. I think this is a key matchup for both teams tonight.
For sure. And it should be an absolute beauty. And it's really neat to me, going along with that intensity. Like somebody asked me yesterday what I missed the most playing in the CFL, and I said it's the intensity. It's for those the 3 hours real time of game day when it feels like it's the most important thing in the world. That's the coolest thing to me. That's what's awesome. And when you get locked and ready, and you're starting to watch the World Series last night, it's sort of the same thing, right? And with the way the Central's composed this year, and it sure isn't hard to look at it and go, my goodness, the war that's going to be waged here for the playoff line, it's going to be spectacular. And the neat thing is to have a team that's that you're cheering for here in Winnipeg that's competitive here and is going to be a part of that the lump of teams wrestling around for it. Every single game, every single period, shift, point that you can extract is going to play a massive. At the end of the 82-game schedule, it's going to be one or two points. If this Jets fan nation is sad and crying in their beer, it's probably going to come down to one or two points, and you're going to look back on the schedule and think of certain opportunities that were missing stuff. It's going to be that fine of a line, which makes each passing game that much more fun.
Yeah, well, and this is a team last year, too, that the Jets owned. They owned them, right? And so Dallas comes in with basically a season's full of of demons they're trying to exorcise tonight, right? Where they had plans of winning the division again last year, and they had plans of taking it to the Jets like they have in years past, and they got both things kind of handed to them. And I like Paul Maurice kind of comparing both teams in their evolution right now. Like, these teams are very similar, where now they didn't bring in a new coach, the Jets, but both have the talent and the skill and need to refine things defensively. And once they do that, then they can kind of enter the pantheon of contenders here. So the Jets, like, it's early in everything, but it really does make a world of difference when you don't have to claw and scratch and fight your way back early in the year or later in the year to get back into the playoff race. When you're already there, things become a whole lot easier, because we've seen it before, right? It sounds stupid, but 4 points back 20 games into the season,
you're in trouble,
is a mountain to climb for every team. And then if there's three or four teams ahead of you that are four points up, it becomes like it shouldn't be that way, right? But that's the reality of the NHL. So the more points and the more wins the Jets can rack up early, while I think admittedly they're not playing their best hockey, the goaltenders are, but the team as a whole isn't playing their best hockey. If you can scratch these wins together early here, and then you get Lowry and Perreault back somewhere around, both of them should be back by American Thanksgiving, I would think. I mean, that's a hell of a spot to be in early in the year.
In the Central, St. Louis has 21 points and 10 wins in 13 games. To me, that is all but solidified a playoff spot for St. Louis. Even if things don't go well, and I know it's still early, they're probably still hanging around at least the second wild card. That's how tough it is to change. And the rest of the Central, Winnipeg 14 points, Dallas 14 points, Chicago 14 points, Colorado, Nashville 12, Minnesota 10. Minnesota has 10 points, is in last in the Central Division. And when you think of that team and how they're built,
it ain't going to stay like that very long.
It is going to be probably, as we talk every year, how the Central Division is the toughest division in the National Hockey League. It could be even more tough this year. It's going to be very intriguing. The Jets have played 11 games, the Stars 12. The Jets are 6-3-2. The Stars are 7-5. The Stars are 4-1 at home, 3-4 on the road, and they're 7-3 in their last 10. The Jets are 6-2-2. Both of these guys, or these teams, I should say, rather, have new guys in net, except for Connor Hellebuyck. He looks new, and Ben Bishop comes in for the Dallas Stars. Is that going to be another key tonight? And I think for the Jets it is, for sure.
Well, undoubtedly. Right, we know dang well that'll be a huge role in what you figure in looking over top the game and sort of in a pregame way. You know, it likely is going to be tight. It's going to be very skilled, wildly entertaining. You cannot go to the penalty box tonight. The power play of the Stars, and we talk about the Jets loading up their first team power play. The Stars load up their first team power play, baby, and they're clipping along at about 30%. So you don't want to give any invitation or challenge any of the recent success you've had with the penalty kill here. And, of course, if there are penalties, that'll put that much more of a spotlight on Connor Hellebuyck having to continue to clip along at a mighty rate, whether it's 5-on-5 or shorthanded. So, you know, goaltenders tonight play a massive role.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the power plays for both teams because, you know, and we talked about this kid yesterday a lot, but Patrick Laine, to break out of his quote-unquote slump, he scored, what was it, 8 goals against the Stars last year? A couple of Hatties, too? So, I mean, if you're looking to maybe make a couple bucks in the old Remus and Hustler DFS, I mean, Laine might be a solid enough pick for you tonight, but Hellebuyck is going to have his work cut out for him. There's no doubt about that, and I know the Jets' penalty kill has been improved numbers-wise as of late, but boy, it really feels like they're playing with fire shorthanded. And I thought the Wild game kind of encapsulated that too, where Hellebuyck, the old saying, the goalie needs to be your best penalty killer. Well, yeah, but he shouldn't be your only penalty killer. He shouldn't be the only guy doing stuff too, right? Like, and I'm not blaming the players necessarily, of course. I still think it's more of a systems yeah. thing where they're trying to be shot blocking, passive, clog up the lane. And it's working now, but I just don't know how successful that is long-term. And let's just hope the Jets don't put that to the test tonight, because they did it too many times against Pittsburgh, did it too many times against Columbus. and even too many times against Minnesota, and they got away with it. Don't know if they'll get away with it for a fourth or a fifth straight game.
4 games in a row, Patrick Laine has not scored a goal or an assist for the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about that and much more all over the Jets and the Dallas Stars on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Heavy with the Jets on the phone lines and, of course, with you during the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour as well. Up next, we'll delve into this World Series a little bit more. We're going to talk some MMA this hour as well and hear from head coach Mike O'Shea of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. This is the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and the Stars tonight at 7 o'clock on TSN 1290 as we present Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey on TSN 1290. Munns, along with Mr. Edmonds on the call, will bring you the broadcast tonight. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Robin Black on his documentary on GSP is coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about that. It aired yesterday on TSN. Mike O'Shea as well. And then, of course, a big hour on the Jets and the Stars and the National Hockey League with the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. Back to the World Series, gentlemen. It wasn't much of a Game 7. Yu Darvish couldn't get out of the second inning. Once again, the Astros take it 7-1. George Springer named Most Valuable Player. Where do you rank the series overall?
Well, what was sort of rolling towards maybe the best series of all time gets the emergency brake pulled on it. So it drops from maybe the greatest of all time to just a real solid, wildly entertaining World Series that had a mind-blowing and mind-boggling number of home runs hit during it.
I mean, can you knock it down so many pegs just because?
Yeah.
No drama in the Game 7.
Yeah.
Like, because going after Game 6, was it the best World Series of all time?
It was knocking on the door.
That's what I don't get about. I get the game wasn't as exciting as the other 6 games were, but the whole logic of the Game 7 and when you pull Darvish, when you pull McCullers Jr., who you come back with, if you steal a base, there's only one steal up until Game 7, all that aspect of it, I get it wasn't as exciting as the other games, but I don't understand when people say because Game 7 was 5-1 and it was 5-0 early, it ruins the whole series. I don't get that.
Well, it removes it. Well, you don't get it because it is 1/7 of what the World Series was and the most important game. So if that Game 7 is just a super tight game and intense all the way through, you don't need to see the, you know, up by 3 and tie it up the way we saw in, what was it, in Game 5 there when it was just back and forth like crazy, but just something intense and tight, because ultimately this is the biggest game, and when it's that much of a letdown, I think it's like popping the balloon of the what was knocking on the door of maybe the greatest World Series ever.
It's kind of funny because, you know, this is a very reactionary society we live in now. But if I had to pick, I'd probably say last year's World Series was the best one ever. Right? With all the drama of the Cubs and the Game 7 mad. Like, you know, the Cubs series, the games were pretty close throughout too, but then you kind of had the cherry on top of the Game 7 madness that we saw. I don't know. I think I'd still put it in my top 5 best World Series of all time. I don't know how. I'd have to look back and see the ones that are kind of ranked in that range. But I don't think you can necessarily just look past, well, the Game 7 wasn't as close as the other ones. The other games were so insane that I think that props it up enough on its own. Not to mention,
there were 2 classics in the previous 6, right? Like, 2 of the games are just
like
ridiculous.
8-7, 13-12 type of games. But there's a lot of series, too, that get looked back on with greater fondness than they should solely because Game 7 was amazing, right? But they'll just ignore the first 6 games of the series that were just kind of
Yeah.
Just kind of games, you know what I mean?
But I think that's fair. I think game seven, when you're at that deciding game, that's the most critical, ultimately, in what's going to remain in people's memories. People will remember game seven more so, or it's obviously more impactful for who walks away and wins it than two or five during the course of the season, right? Those are great storylines for sure, but game seven is the oomph of any series.
But isn't just having a game seven, even if it isn't as good as the other six, the act of the game seven, like in the fifth inning when it's 5-0 and you get another out, or you get another, you're wondering what, man, they're running out of time. They're running, like, it's the magnification of the game seven itself. Doesn't that, even if it's not as exciting as the other games, add to the series as well? The fact that, like, it, to me, when it was 3-0 and then 5-0, and then, you know, the Dodgers are getting two guys on and can't cash them. The Dodgers are getting another guy on. It's, if that's a game four, I'm not as glued to it, even though it's been a boring so far, as I am last night going, man, if they cash a run here. Even when they got one run, I'm like, if they chip away every, like, because it's game seven.
No question about it. Right, just the game seven period brings a certain level of intensity of it, but you've got a chance to make something magical and truly special, historical, if you serve up a beauty dish on game seven.
Where do you rank the series itself? We'll do that in the Boss Pizza fan line as well on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day that's coming up at 9. Up next, Robin Black joins us to talk about GSP on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekday 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on a lovely Thursday morning, 34 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290 and The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio. Plenty more on the Bombers in this hour. We're going to talk some GSP, George St. Pierre coming up as well, and then, of course, the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. It is a Road Sport Auto Credit Winnipeg Jets hockey on the station today on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars live from Bell MTS Place at 7 o'clock. Right now, we welcome back into the program from TSN and via Winnipeg, Mr. Robin Black, MMA analyst and color commentator. Robin, how are you?
Good, guys. I'm down here in New York. It's 7:30 in the morning, and I'm pumped to talk to you guys.
Well, thanks for getting up to do so. We're talking about your documentary that aired yesterday, which was outstanding, The Mind of GSP. Before we get into that specifically, he's got a big bout this weekend as he returns from retirement.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird one, right? You're rich, you're handsome, you're doing other cool stuff and traveling the world and acting, and you want to get back into a cage and get punched in the face and potentially injured or embarrassed for money that you don't need and fame that you don't really care about. You know, it's a strange one. But he loves the martial arts, and he loves being a martial artist. And he loves training. He loves training and growing as a fighter. And I think all of that stuff just has way more meaning when there's a fight coming up. And I think ultimately that's why he's doing this.
Robin, the mind of GSP, right from the get-go, man, just always came across as being very cerebral, smart, well-spoken, presented himself well. For those that didn't see it, and we'll tweet it out here right away so folks can catch it if they missed it last night, but can you take us through this and maybe let us know what stood out from it the very most for you?
I think, you know, I went into this, so TSN approached me about doing this documentary when we started hearing that he was going to come back. And we kind of thought, well, if he comes back, following him and following his sort of trip back will be interesting. But I also thought, if he doesn't, that'll be interesting too. You know, it wasn't like we needed the man to fight to be able to tell us a story about his life that people would find fascinating. And so along the way, kind of, you know, I expected to find stories of a superhuman and this guy who was capable of these brilliant things and what made him so much better than the rest of us. And really what I found was how totally human the guy is. He's afraid of things, including fighting in the cage and failing and being embarrassed. And he gets anxious and uncomfortable. And really we ended up finding out, you know, we think of George St. Pierre as this robot, and he actually is very, very fragile human being like everybody else.
Well, and that comes from his background, Robin, as well. Maybe touch on that for the listeners that know who GSP is, but never really his upbringing and stuff, and how he was, you know, bullied as a child and fell in love with this sport and sort of turned himself into this fighting machine that's made him so successful.
Yeah, he has talked about bullying before, and George even kind of goes out of his way to... He has a couple of foundations that he's been involved in. One is an anti-bullying and kind of empowering young kids. So it's something that he's been into and has been a part of his life since he was a little kid that people spit on, literally. You know, and I think we were able to really capture that. The producer and director, Simon Galland, and, you know, the guys went down, and the way that they showed the story of his town and the school, it really set the stage for you a little bit. But there were stories he told us, you know, that don't make a 23-hour doc, of big kids, literally, he can hear them just, you know, making that sound that when you're storing up, you know, the projectile that you're going to spit at a kid, and he can hear them as he's walking through the bus, you know, head down, hunched over, frightened. And how eventually training karate was the thing that, it didn't just teach him to fight. And, I trained martial arts as a kid, too, and I think it's the greatest thing any parent can give to a kid. It changes your life, and it changed his life. It made him confident and realize that, you know, conflict is something, it is something to be feared, but it's something that you can walk towards that fear. And he does that every single time he fights, and he'll do that on Saturday. You know, this thing is a big, strong, and he's kind of a bully, you know, and I think it's kind of all come together. And it was really, I'm really thrilled that we could tell that story.
The neat thing to me in GSP and, you know, anyone who watched him with his fights, he is a tactician on the ground. He's kind of the opposite of Conor McGregor, right? In every way possible, whether it's like the showman and how outlandish Conor McGregor is and how flashy Conor McGregor is in the ring compared to GSP just kind of getting down and dirty and not really caring about giving you what some would consider entertainment in the octagon, but like just because he's so technical and he's just going to sort of wear you down, he's going to win rounds sort of quietly by dominating you on the ground. Do you see him being able to pull that off against Bisping?
So I had the real, like, as a nerdy fight obsessive, I got to go in to Enzo Gracie's gym last night and do some work with John Danaher. And John Danaher is this genius of jiu-jitsu who's been George's coach for many years. And he showed me in detail little bits and ideas of them identifying what Bisping does and how what George has done to kind of prepare for it. And yes, I think, you know, now it's hard to balance these things, even when you analyze this stuff for a living 10 hours a day or more. You're still missing a lot of information. But last night I got a lot direct from the source. And if and when George is on top of Michael Bisping, I think he is going to dominate him like he's dominated every other fighter who's been on top of him.
Away from the documentary and more about the bout this weekend, Robin, just talk a little bit about that and sort of not only GSP and his talents and how they match up, but literally just coming back off such a long layoff. How is he? Is he like at the peak of where he was? Is he going to be rusty? What do you expect?
I think, and because we did spend so much time with him and we got into so much, we peeled back so many layers that I don't think many of us have ever seen about George's mentality, I focus, you know, we are somewhat focused as we look at him about that. It's like, how is he going to perform? How is he going to be, is he going to be free to do the things without second-guessing himself? Because if he is, he's in unbelievable shape. Physically and physicality and athleticism, you know, we think of it, it has many different forms when you think of many different athletes. He's big and strong and fast, but he changes direction incredibly quickly. He is super flexible, you know, he's uninjured, and his skills are better than they've ever been. So if he is able to perform freely, he is going to look amazing, better than he's ever looked.
Robin, is there any update on Cyborg and Holm?
man, I sure love that fight. I've been hearing around yesterday around the UFC area that's going to happen on December 30th. I don't think it's confirmed yet in Vegas, but I'm hearing that is what they're looking at, either setting up or main or co-main kind of thing. That is an amazing, amazing fight. In the world of women's combat, I mean, we have Rose versus Joanna on Saturday, and that is brilliant as far as skill and ability and speed and stuff. But as far as just, you know, putting together two devastating female fighters, Holly Holm and Cyborg is probably the best fight in the world.
It's a TSN original. It's called The Mind of GSP, and it was put together by Robin Black and the people at TSN. Now, Robin, anything in this 23 minutes, 23 seconds that people can view at TSN.ca stand out to you? Anything about it surprise you, given the fact that you do know GSP so well?
I think his how honest he was, and I do, you know, humbly believe that because I know him well and because we're friends and he respects me, that I was able to get some things from him I know that we've never seen before. And I think the biggest one is really how human it is to fear fighting a professional athlete across a cage from you in almost no clothes in front of a million people. You know, we logically, when we think about it, we should be frightened. We think about us in that situation, and we think, of course, we'd be terrified, and so are they. And I think somehow that adds, that enriches that experience of watching these guys even more for me.
Great stuff, Robin. We appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you, guys. I'll see you in Winnipeg in December.
Can't wait, man. Keep kicking ass, Robin.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the hostilities, my friend.
Should be a good one. You think he wins this weekend?
I don't know. Bisping's a badass, man. Like, I don't know. I really don't know.
I just don't know what to expect. Like, I don't expect anything less from GSP than being who he is, given how he trains and everything else. But that's a long layoff.
A long layoff. And these two, their styles are so different. Like, GSP is just down on the ground nonstop, and Bisping is going to knock your ass out. So It's going to be like Bisping, 58% of his fights, he's 31-7, are knockout or TKO, with the GSP at only 32%, right? And twice as many submissions GSP has. We've just seen, I don't know, it's going to be something. It's going to be a beauty.
It's a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets a game day, Jets and Stars, as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey on TSN 1290 tonight at 7. But up next, we'll delve into the Bombers and hear from head coach Mike O'Shea on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekday 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey on TSN 1290 tonight, as it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Stars, 7 o'clock, full pre- and post-game coverage as well, and more on the game coming up in our next hour, which is the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour, by the way, or NHL News and Notes in that time as well, and Dennis Bayek, and your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers had just their second practice of the week, and they were only having two, where Mike O'Shea announced at practice and, of course, post-practice, Dan Lefevre will be the starting quarterback, the third-string quarterback on the depth chart over Dom Davis, the second stringer, going into Calgary on Friday night. Here's head coach Mike O'Shea on why Lefevre.
Play last game, experience, overall CFL game experience, you know, the type of game we're probably going to play, you know, yeah. The style of game it's going to be.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, you look at what the weather conditions are going to be like, right? It's going to be a bit of a mutter type of game.
Yeah.
A mutter. Lefevre's a mutter. His mutter was a mutter. His father was a mutter.
I wonder if he knows that, like, because some guys, myself, is in this batch, that you like foul, crap weather. It's just something that appeals to you, and you enjoy going out there trying to perform in it. And I wonder if he's aware that Dan Lefevre is kind of down with getting ugly like that and doesn't mind the snow and wind and all the rest of it. I do think that the one thing I feel real confident about is we're going to see anyone who watched the game last week, you're going to see a very different guy behind center, I believe, in how, and of course, thank goodness for it, But the level that you're going to see of production from them, even though it's a difficult Calgary Stampeder defense, and this is really going to be neat to me to see the mastery of Paul LaPolice and what he puts into effect here for to counter what is the Calgary's defense is devastating. They're the number one team in sacks by a long shot, number one in quarterback pressure. They are just nonstop in your face, coming at you. And from an overall standpoint, they're number one in only surrendering 322 net yards against. Compare that to Bombers 410. So this is one versus nine as far as defenses go. And Dan LeFever is going to have his hands full. They don't have a chance in hell if they give the ball away. Like ball security in all the games up to this point in time. This is the one when you don't have your starting quarterback and the quarterback coming in has a propensity to be a little bit wild or careless, think cross-body throw, cross-field, all the rest of it, that has got to be completely gonzo. You can't go out there and toss an interception or two and think you have a hope in hell of winning this game. The only way the Bombers win this game is with a clean sheet on their part from turnovers.
Yeah, I guess it would make sense because if it is a mutter type of game, there's not a whole lot of pretty in Dan LeFever as a quarterback, right? I was talking to someone at the gym yesterday, and they were like, why does he throw the ball like that? Like, the ball never comes out as a perfect spiral all the time, and it's kind of fluttery. But we saw against the Bombers a few years ago, you know, sometimes, you know, the Peyton Manning flutterer gets the job done. And as long as he gets the ball out quick and gets it to where it's supposed to be, that shouldn't be an issue. And I kind of wonder, too, if maybe LeFever's willingness to run more gives him a bit of an edge as well. And if Paul LaPolice doesn't maybe design some quarterback runs and maybe even goes to the option a bit more and allows LeFever to kind of carry the ball that way, maybe to try and throw the Stamps off balance.
Well, as we've been saying, and as it has been the case, Dom Davis is the second quarterback on the depth chart, but he's going with his third string. And here's head coach Mike O'Shea and why experience matters.
I think it matters at any position. You know, not just the quarterback position, maybe more so at the quarterback position, but every position, there's a certain level of comfort that comes with experience, right? Just the idea that you've been there and done it and seen more pitchers and played more snaps of it, right?
It will forever be a mystery to me, though, to some degree, why the Dom Davis running up to number two. I don't know if having him second on the depth chart this year and last, I don't know if through practice, because he's practicing with the first team offense, you know, if you're still trying to come to an understanding of just what exactly Dom Davis is, do you have him on the depth chart so that you get to see him at least in practice a whole bunch of snaps or the snaps that are available to the backup quarterback compared to him if he's, you know, the third string guy, you just don't, he'd be working against the scout team and stuff. It's strange. The whole thing is strange to me still. But hopefully in this 1 week of practice with the top team, even though it's a short week, hopefully that's enough to give the Bombers a chance with Dan LeFever.
Well, here's Mr. Dom Davis speaking with the media yesterday, and clearly he states he's disappointed.
Yeah, I'm disappointed. You know, I didn't agree with it, but I respect the decision. You know, it's just part of the game, and, you know, I'll continue to stay ready and be Dan's biggest supporter.
And here's more of Davis on why he's upset.
Yeah, just the fact that, you know, I was the number two, and I just felt like it was, you know, Matt went down. It was just, you know, my turn, my time to, you know, help the team win the game. But, again, it's just the coach's decision, and I respect his decision and just got to roll from there.
Dom Davis ain't young. Dom Davis is 28 years old. Right? Like, this is when you number two or get off the pot sort of thing as a pro athlete. And I would be shocked if Dominic Davis is a part of this organization next year.
Well, that's probably why he's rattled by this. This is his chance to keep his pro football career going, right? Like, if he gets let go by the Bombers next year, there's no way
another CFL team
picks him up, right? Yeah. So that's – I'd be pissed too, right? When you're number two all season long, and the second there's an injury for a guy to get into the game as the starter – and they flip the script on you.
Well, he was given two chances to make an impact.
Fair. Fair. But I get where he's coming from, though, right? Like, he feels like he should be the guy because He was the guy. He was anointed as their guy.
Well, in his mindset, he feels like he's done enough. That's why you named me number two. Like, so if I, and now you're basically saying, you know, what you've believed that you've earned isn't there anymore, clearly. What do you think of the offense with Dan LeFevre going into Calgary? I know you just rattled off all the Stamps defensive stats and everything else.
Well, I think that you're going to get a – expect it to be very compact, I think, as far as down the field goes. I think it's going to be a very managed-type situation. And it's – they're in tough. The Bombers are in real tough here, right? Like, you've got – and I've been saying this all year long – leading up to this playoff game, if the Bombers ever get to Calgary, where even if it's Matt Nichols behind center, you've got Matt Nichols and the offense of the Bombers needs to cause more damage against Calgary's defense, which is the best in the CFL, more damage than what Matt Nichols, Jerome Messam, and the Calgary offense is going to cause against the Bomber defense, which right now in net yards allowed is the worst in the league. And last week against BC, they gave up 8 explosion plays. Like, they are a train wreck of epic proportion right now, the Bombers are, on defense. So I don't know what can be concocted. The funny thing is, or the tragic thing is, I suppose, offensively for the Bombers, going out there and just sort of, you know, picking up some first downs and getting it done and being decent – ain't going to be enough, because it's highly unlikely Bo Levi Mitchell and Jerome Messam aren't going to take it to the Bomber defense. So it's a tough one.
The Anchor Products NHL Power Hour is next on The Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey on TSN 1290 tonight at 7, as it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Dallas Stars are in town to take on the Winnipeg Jets. We have your NHL news and notes coming up, as it is the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour.
When we get ready here to talk to Tate, you're going to have to – he's a baseball guy too, huh?
He is.
Yeah. Loves the game.
He tweeted out a picture of Jeff Bridges throwing out the first pitch, and he looks like he's had some better days, and said maybe he can come out of the bullpen.
Bridges always looks like that. It's like a perpetual look.
He gives her. He's a giver. He gives.
He's a giver.
Dennis Bayak, face of the Jets on TSN 3 and main voice here on TSN 1290, joins us at the bottom of the hour. We also have your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas today, and we'll hear from head coach Paul Maurice in this segment as well. But our first guest is Mr. Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com. How are you, Ed?
Fantastic, fellas. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How good was that World Series? Where do you rank it?
I'd rank it really up there. I mean, Game 7 just makes it, puts it ahead of a lot of others. But, man, it was a little bit of everything. There was a, boy, that game the other night that was 5 hours long was like a slow-pitch game with all the runs being scored and home runs. And it was a little bit of everything, and it was fantastic to see a franchise that hadn't won a World Series one too, so that was cool.
And it's quite a challenge this weekend here coming up on tomorrow for the Bombers. And what's interesting to me, Ed, is that it's not just that Dan LeFevre's got to go out there and protect the ball, because the Bomber defense is in tough against a very good offense. Dan LeFevre's got to go out there and be productive on top of protecting the ball.
Yeah, there's a whole lot going on with this one, Troy. You know, I was just thinking a couple of weeks ago, you know, we were selling this one as potentially a battle for first place, and now, you know, the Bombers roll in there reeling a bit and with a question at quarterback. And the other thing that's going to be interesting is what are we going to see from the Calgary Stampeders? So as much as we, like, I'm not sure what Dan LeFevre is going to have to do. If it's a bunch of backups. I saw something yesterday that Calgary might change their entire defensive line and rest people. So it's kind of hard to set this one up and talk about what they're going to have to do. I think Calgary's defense is the best in the league by far, but are we going to see Calgary's defense tomorrow night? You know, because they're going to rest a bunch of guys. And Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what the Bombers do and what, you know, regardless of whether they're playing Calgary's number one or number two or, you know, just a bunch of guys cobbled together from the streets in Calgary, they got to figure out how to get things going with a different guy at the quarterback position.
Ed, where's Dom Davis at, not only with this decision to go with Dan Lefevre, but overall in the organization in your mind?
That's a good one, Jim. You know, clearly he's disappointed about what happened last Saturday and then with the decision to go with Dan Lefevre. You know, I don't know where, honestly, I don't know where things stand. So, because there's a couple ways to look at this, the decision to go with Dan Lefevre. One is that they've gone with him just because he's got more experience and they're going to try to, like Michael Shea said yesterday, they're going to try to win a mutter. And, you know, Dan Lefevre could have 10, 12 carries tomorrow night. Who knows? But you wonder, does this mean the end of Dom Davis, or is this just something where they don't think he's quite ready? I don't know how you could say that after all the time he's had, but I think he's disappointed, and if he's got the same questions that we do, he's got to be wondering about what his future is, because, you know, they brought in two or three quarterbacks here to take a look at with the practice roster expansion in the last little while. And I know that, Josh Strawn, they're going to bring back to training camp next year. So there's always someone looking you have to look over your shoulder in this business, and he probably has to look over his shoulder more than anybody right now.
Yeah, there's not many work environments where paranoia permeates the walls more so than in CFL football. I don't know Andrew Harris well, Ed. But I know him well enough to know that he's a guy that, man, I would have loved to have played on the same team with him, and that contagious sort of thing that he emits. It would have been a lot of fun to have been around that. And he's right up there with the very toughest of dudes that I've ever been around. And to see him decimated the way he was in that game with that hit, and then to help to have him to be helped up and all the rest of it, and also knowing that, like, he's just built differently with, you can see that when he, you know, how often he gets hit where the other guy falls down and like all those sorts of things, that it doesn't surprise me ultimately that he's bounced back and he to feel good for him to come out and say that he's good to go and all the rest of it for this game upcoming here tomorrow. It blows my mind, but it doesn't surprise me with him. Your thoughts on the whole situation with Andrew Harris?
Yeah, so, I mean, with a lot of guys, there's a very compelling argument to sit people down and just be ready for the playoffs. Whether the game's in Winnipeg, whether the game's in Edmonton, you need Andrew Harris. And so I can understand that part of the argument, too. But, I mean, just from how you set this up, Troy, how do you go to Andrew Harris and say, yeah, you're taking this one off? I mean, he might bust the table in front of you when you try to explain that to him, right? Because every snap matters to him. And I think it just goes back to his backstory and how hard it was for him to get to where he is right now. This isn't a guy that was, you know, a first-round draft pick that was a star at, a big-time Canadian college. He had to go the junior route. If you know the story, he took the ferry every day from Vancouver Island to Vancouver to go from junior practice to Lions practice and back and forth, and, you know, was seen as a receiver at first or a returner and then worked his way into the backfield. And so he's had to overcome so much to get here. I think he just doesn't want to give it up to anybody right now. And so there's a lot going on there. And I'm with you, Troy. He's one of the toughest guys I've seen, but it's a mental toughness with him too. And so I'm not surprised that he's back tomorrow. You can argue about whether he should be playing or not, but try telling him to take a knee.
Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com joining us on the big show this morning, TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour. This is the Anchor Products Power Hour as well. Ed, every week Richie Hall seems to lose more and more patience with his defense and literally calls it, the performances the last 2 weeks, embarrassing. Where is he at with his players and his players with him and just trying to figure this out? Because he seems to think, and maybe rightfully so, it's an execution problem.
Yeah, so it's yesterday it was funny sitting there listening to him again talk about embarrassing and all the things that have gone wrong, but in between that, too, there was, you know, there's an awful lot of frustration because he's seen the snippets where, you know, like a couple weeks ago when they basically controlled BC for about 55 minutes before those two late touchdowns. You know, there's been when they went into Edmonton a few or last month and did a really good job against the Eskimos. So there's times when this defense looks great, but there's more times when, you know, there's those explosion plays again. And I think the frustration for him and for Mike O'Shea and everybody, if you ask the players too, is that it's not scheme. They think it is focus, that it is execution, that, you know, a young defense is just kind of falls asleep sometimes and forgets its assignment. And I think that's where his frustration's coming from. But after a while, you wonder, you know, what's going on here? Why is it the same thing over and over and over again? It gets tiring for him to be saying it, and for Bomber fans, it's tiring to be hearing it, too.
So what do you expect from this? Can they get a home playoff date tomorrow near mine?
Well, I mean, look, it's going to be tough to go in there and win this game. Even with, we don't know what Calgary will look like.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what's going to happen Saturday between Saskatchewan and Edmonton. I think a lot of people have got their fingers crossed that...
Eddie, I just looked. I saw Saskatchewan's 4.5-point favorites in that game. I can't believe that.
Yeah, I guess that's must be, you know, what do you get, a field goal for being the home team?
Yeah, normally, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm surprised, too, because Edmonton's playing really good football right now. So is Saskatchewan, but... So this, you know, Friday night's going to be a weird one because of all the things going on with the Bombers, and we don't know what Calgary will look like. And then I think Saturday's game's going to be spectacular, but there's a lot of people suspicious that, you know, the Riders might kind of hold back on this one so they can try to go through the East. It's going to be a weird weekend because of all those things, but I just know a lot of people have got their fingers crossed that there's going to be a game in Winnipeg on November 12th.
It's going to be a fascinating end of the regular season this weekend and what transpires, especially in the standings in the West. Ed, we appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the game tomorrow in Calgary.
Yeah, right on, boys. Have a good day. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much, brother. Take care, man. I like what Ed said. Okay. We need. Could you go tell Andrew he can't play? Oh boy.
You're sitting this one out. We know you're at 998 yards, but you're going to sit this one out.
What he's at.
Yeah, Troy, why are you in full equipment here? I mean, we're just in the weight room. What's going on?
See O'Shea sitting there, and his old linebacker mask before that one.
Can I get you to do me a solid and go pick this up 4 hours away at about 6 tomorrow night? What? Thanks to Ed Tate. BlueBombers.com is where you read all his fine work. This is the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour, and up next on The Big Show, your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. From the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
.780-1290 as it's your chance, your first chance on the Big Show to qualify as TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending 5 lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November the 10th. A T-Mobile Arena will supply return airfare to and from Las Vegas. Free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. 2 hockey tickets, Jets versus Golden Knights, November the 10th, again at their home arena, which is called the T-Mobile Arena. 4 nights accommodations right on the strip at the luxurious MGM Grand Hotel, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, at 12:15 p.m. with Kevin Olszewski on the Don Vito Roundtable, and at 5:15 p.m. with Hustler and Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride, or watch for bonus chances to qualify online as well. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. We've done 4 of them already, so we have 8 people on their way to Vegas, and we need 2 more people. 1 more grand prize winner will be announced on Monday, November the 6th, so getting down to the nitty-gritty here. The nitty-gritty is what I said in order for you to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. For more information and all the details, you can check out tsn1290.ca. It's Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And TSN at 1290. 12th caller through will be our first qualifier today. And, of course, just for doing so, you'll get a Jets gear gift card.
Woo!
Woo! It's getting down.
It's like next week, right, man?
We'll announce Monday morning, November the 6th, our fifth and final grand prize winner. And then literally days later, you'll
then
be getting
on
a plane.
We've renegotiated this thing, and the big show is taking off with you, baby.
Woo-hoo. Up here? I'm already there, just like Kramer going to California. Up here, I'm already there, Jerry. Mr. Rewicki, who's our 12th caller through?
It's Al Lesko.
Al Lesko, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. Congratulations for qualifying.
Well, it's hard to get through, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I know. Calm down, okay? You're too excited.
I am calmed down. I'm good now.
You were worried about not getting in?
Say again?
You were worried about not getting in?
Absolutely. I've been trying since the beginning. It's not easy.
Outstanding. Have you ever been to Vegas?
Yes, sir, I have.
What's a guy like you do in Vegas?
Get into trouble and gamble.
Sounds like you're in trouble.
Right, baby!
Get in
right
trouble with the Cyrus.
Sounds like you're in trouble right now, Al.
Yes, I am.
Well, we'll let you know that just for doing so, qualifying today, you'll get a Jets Gear gift card. Okay. We'll let you call that lawyer, whoever you're trying to get a hold of with the sirens in the background, and you're in for Monday's grand prize draw.
$12.90. Go towards.
Take care, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Al.
Good luck.
That's not our sensor button I'm hitting, by the way, either.
That's a beauty.
Is he dropping language? Al, he's got the heat, the 5-0 all around him. He's trying to make a call while he's qualifying. That's a dedicated Jets fan who wants to go to Vegas and see the Jets and the Golden Knights on November the 10th. The grand prize draw is November 6th. We'll have another chance for you to qualify in the next hour of the big show here on TSN 1290. But it is Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey here on the station tonight at 7 with the Dallas Stars coming to town to take on the Winnipeg Jets on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Head coach Paul Maurice had these thoughts on facing Central Division rivals, the Dallas Stars, for the first time this season.
I thought their season last year almost mirrored ours, you know, and kind of similar again. I think they added four important pieces, and we did too. And Tyler Myers was one of them, and they're trying to play a better defensive hockey game, and I think they're dialed into that. They got some good high-end skill and speed up front, got some good size. Now they've gotten some real good goaltending, so pretty similar. It's going to be it's always potential for a really exciting game. I think probably both teams are hopeful that it can be really exciting and played well at the same time, which would be a change from last year.
21-8-2 last year in this, the Jets in the Central. They're 2-0 so far this year, I believe, unless I'm out to lunch looking at the record stuff here. But they're just kicking butt, man. Kicking butt in the Central. It doesn't even make sense, right? 19-8-2 last year doesn't really even make sense and miss the playoffs, right? They had the same record as Chicago in the Central last year, and you missed the playoffs. That was just kooky.
Yeah, that is one of the most interesting stats of last year. They've done so well in the division.
They sucked against the Pacific.
And not make the playoffs.
7-13-1.
And we know the games against Colorado. I think there was an overtime game here where they gave up a point. There was definitely a loss.
Scored on his own net in Colorado.
Yeah, and there was definitely a loss in Colorado. So the Central Division record from last year is really something. But as you said, they're 2-0. Do you agree? Because I do. Like the changes the Stars made, new coach excluded, on the ice and some of the roster moves that the Jets did, like these are two franchises that kind of mirror each other in what they did in the offseason.
Yeah, well, and look at the goal differential and their goals for and goals against this year. They're basically identical. They're both plus one. The Stars have scored one more and given up one more. So it's and not only that, but Ben Bishop's been pulled in two of his games, and he's still rocking a .920 save percentage. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, the underlying numbers for the Stars paint a pretty rosy picture, which is I guess when you're talking about these two teams being similar, that might be where the similarities end there. I picked the Stars to win the division going into the year. And St. Louis is off to a pretty nice start, but I don't think Dallas has done a whole lot to necessarily dissuade that early on. I think they're I think they're going to be in the top two by the time the season's over.
Yeah. We'll talk more about the game when Dennis Bayak joins us next on The Big Show on TSN 1290 live from the Royal Sports Studio.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey on the station tonight at 7 on TSN 1290 with the Dallas Stars in town to take on the Winnipeg Jets as it is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Full pre- and post-game coverage, including the afternoon ride at 3 o'clock live from Boston Pizza City Place. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show with Kevin Olszewski at 6, puck drop at 7 with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns. And then the Huron Windows post-game show will wrap it all up for you. Live from Boss Pizza City Place as well. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour. And this segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. And it is with the face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of our main voices here at TSN 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How was practice yesterday? And not just about Adam Lowry and Matthew Perreault and all the other injuries, but where's this team at after that win in Minnesota in your mind?
Well, it was optional. There was some guys that didn't take the ice. They'll skate this morning in preparation for tonight's game. But the guys that maybe didn't get as many minutes in Minnesota or haven't been getting as many minutes over the last handful of games as some guys did took to the ice. And they got their workout in. And, you know, for Tucker Pullman and Ben Chiarot and those guys that don't get into the lineup, you know, because of right now, from the back end especially, this team has been relatively healthy other than Dustin Byfuglien missing a couple of games. You know, they stay out a little longer, get some work done, and the rest of the guys come in and get their things done, and the guys that weren't on the ice probably had an off-ice workout, and then they go home and get ready for tonight.
Maybe if we can, please touch on that disallowed Armia goal that was way off for the horse crap called hand pass, and it's not reviewable, and all kinds of stuff. It's a shame to me that the NHL, similar to, say, the NFL, I think they should, all goals should be reviewed. I think it's something that no one would even notice, wouldn't have to talk about it. But in those situations, command center, come check it down and give you the right. You know, if there's a problem, they can deal with it. And just it seems to me it would be a better thing, way to incorporate things there, Dennis. But your thoughts on the mistake made there?
Yeah, I agree. I think any time the puck ends up in the net, I think it's a reviewable play. I know in this case why they, you know, the way the rules are situated, but I think that really needs to be looked at. I mean, it really is difficult to tell, not whether it was a glove pass, because it wasn't. That just goes off his body and down, but it really is difficult to tell whose stick it finally hit on the way in, because both Tyler Myers and Joel Armia had their sticks there. But regardless of that, it was not a glove pass, and the goal should have stood. So I'm with you 100%. You know, I think in this day and age when we do everything we can to try and get more goals into the game, let alone the fact just how important wins are. You know, you've got a divisional win, and I mean, in this case, it didn't cost the Winnipeg Jets anything, but I mean, we've seen games where it has. It's cost a team at least maybe a point, maybe two. And, you know, I just think it's so close now as far as the standings are concerned. I think there's so much on the line. If the puck ends up in the net, take the time, have a look at it, get the right call, and move on. I mean, we spend so much time with the offside review and goaltender interference review. Why not just make it plain and simple? If the puck ends up in the net, we're going to have a look to make sure we get it right.
No points for Patrick Laine in the past four games. He does have 6 points in 11 games. So where do you think he's at 11 games into his sophomore season?
Well, you might be glad the Dallas Stars are in town. he had 12 points in 5 games against the Dallas Stars last year. So maybe that's what he's saving up for. I mean, he's been good defensively. You know, I think offensively he's still finding his way. He's getting a little more attention than what he did last year. that one-timer that was so effective for him. You know, teams, you just watch their penalty kill. They cheat over there. They keep an eye on him. And, you know, so I'm not sure that he's totally happy offensively where he is. But from a defensive side, I think he's okay with where his game is. And now it's just a matter of fine-tuning and you know, maybe getting the shot off a little bit quicker, shooting it a little bit more than maybe he has in some games. There has been games where I felt that he did have a chance to shoot the puck, and instead he's looking to pass it off, whether it be to the Ehlers or Little, if it's on the power play, getting it back to Buffman at the blue line. So he'll find a comfort zone, and I still think the offense will come for him.
You think the Stars under Hitchcock are basically what you'd think they'd be at this point in time?
Well, they're getting there. I think like the Winnipeg Jets, you know, I think both teams talked in the off season about becoming a better defensive team and solidifying their goaltending, and they did that with Ben Bishop, and then he got hurt. So, you know, their goals against is probably higher than where a Ken Hitchcock team normally is. There's been some games where they've allowed more goals than certainly a Ken Hitchcock team would do. They look like they're finding that game, though. And you know, you still have the offensive weapons. But I think them, like the Winnipeg Jets, you know, I think in the end of November into December is when you're really going to get an idea of what this team is all about. Have they grasped the defensive side of the game? And I mean, certainly both teams are trending that way. Dallas's special teams are absolutely off the chart. Their season stats, but more their recent stats, both power play and penalty kill are just absolutely terrific. So that's certainly something that the Jets are going to have to be cognizant of tonight. But you know, you've got a team that's looking to change the way it plays simply because of what you mentioned with Ken Hitchcock coming in. And it will take a while to grasp that system.
Ben Bishop wasn't happy with Ken Hitchcock having been pulled in a 3-2 game, thought there's a lot of hockey left. He voiced his opinion on that, and we've heard this from players that play for Ken Hitchcock in the past. But then he goes out and has a couple good games, including a 38-save performance in Vancouver. Talk about Ken Hitchcock a little bit and how he sort of does exactly what happened with Ben Bishop, sort of got him to be better.
Well, Hitch came out after the game, though, and said that he didn't do it because of Ben Bishop. He did it because his team was sleepy. And you know, maybe that's half true, and maybe half of it is that he wanted to snap Ben Bishop a little bit, and maybe he didn't feel that Bishop was at the top of his game. And you expect that from Ben Bishop. I don't think there's a player in the National Hockey League, or at least a goalie in the National Hockey League, or a pitcher or a quarterback or whatever sport you want to talk about that likes to get yanked out of the game. And you know, so Ben Bishop said what he had to say, and Ken Hitchcock did and said what he had to say, and you play on, and you're right. I mean, Ben Bishop's game has kind of been a lot better since, whether that was part of it. I mean, that's always the moot point and the big debate, but you never really come to an answer. Ken Hitchcock teams are normally a very disciplined squad. I mean, I still think that's something that... It's tough to judge in the early going, the discipline, because of kind of what we saw the other night in Minnesota. There was penalties called in that game that I'm not sure other referees would have called, but that's the way it is, and we're still going to see that from game to game. But Ken Hitchcock's teams play a very defensive-minded game, and yet he does have some offensive weapons. We talk about their special team Sagan's numbers against the Winnipeg Jets, Ben's numbers against the Winnipeg Jets, Spezza's, throw him into that as well, are all very good. So we've seen some wild, wild games between these two teams. I don't expect it this year simply because I think, and this is the first time we get a chance to see Dallas, they are starting to grasp that system and that style that Ken Hitchcock preaches. I watched part of the game in Vancouver the other night, and it looked like they were certainly a better defensive team than what they were at times last year.
Hard to believe Tyler Myers, at 11 games played this year, has matched the number that he played last year. Is he starting to look comfortable to you, Dennis?
Yeah, he is. I think 20 is the number that you know, Paul Maurice has talked about, and I think even Tyler Myers kind of has that in the back of his mind. You know, give me 20 games, and then I think we can safely say that he's moved on from some of last year's ailments. He's been playing in all situations. It's really interesting when you look at the minutes played game by game for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, one night it's Jacob Trouba, one night it's Bufflin, it's been Bufflin more than not, but other times Tyler Myers is way up there. I mean, even Shifley and Wheeler have been way up there, but I think Tyler Myers is really has to be happy with where his game is right now in all aspects. Him and Dmitry Kulikov have been a very good pair. He's playing power plays. He's on the penalty kill. But more than that, just the fact that he's playing, and he does seem to, I think if you asked him, I don't think it's even in the back of his mind anymore. I think that that's gone. He just goes out there and plays now, and that's what you want without even thinking about anything that's happened on the ice in the past. But I think him and Dmitry Kulikov have been a very good pair, and Tyler Myers' game, they have to be happy with where it's at.
Dennis Bayak of TSN 3 and TSN 1290 joining us on the Big Show this morning on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour on TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour. How big of a week is this with the Minnesota Wild and a victory and then the Dallas Stars and, of course, Montreal Canadiens before the Jets head out on the road for a bit? This is a big game tonight, but also this week they have a chance to, now that they have that win, Dennis, really push forward in what is a tight, tight Central Division.
Well, it is, and you've lost a couple of games out of the Central because of Vegas coming in, so you've got three games that you would normally have in the Central Division that you don't anymore because they went over to the Western Conference and you got to play those games. So every game in the division, the expectation is that the Central is going to be a dogfight right to the bitter end, and we've got nothing happening in the first 10, 11, 12 games by any of the teams to believe anything differently. St. Louis is off to a better start. Colorado's off to a better start, so it looks like, St. Louis looks like they're going to run away with it right now, but they've got a lot of divisional games coming up as well. So, and then you got Montreal. There's always the excitement of the Montreal Canadiens. So, but anytime you get into a divisional game, just start figuring out if it is 5-3, and there's no indication that it's going to be 5-3. Let's go 4-4. Who's going to miss? I mean, there's some good teams that are going to miss the playoffs out of the Central Division. So every game is huge. That's the old cliche. But I think going on to Saturday, anytime the Montreal Canadiens come into town, it's like the Toronto Maple Leafs or whatever, in a lesser degree, the Rangers and the Red Wings and some of the original six. But I think any time Montreal comes to town, there's a very heavy Montreal fan base in this area. And we'll see lots of Montreal jerseys Saturday. But it's a big week. It's a big month simply because of the amount of games that they play, 14 games. I think it's in 29 days or 28 or 30 days, whatever they'll play, I think, because they don't play the first. So add it up. Lots of road games coming up, so I just think that they've got a good thing going right now, and as much as at the start of the season it's how you play, we're almost to that point now where it's important how you play, but it's important to pick up some points along the way, and that eventually you're going to get to the point in the season where it doesn't matter how you play, it's all about picking up points. You can play ugly and get points because that's what it's all about at that point, but we are almost to that point now where you want to play well, but you still want to see the results. That U.S. Thanksgiving deadline, which is coming up later this month, is always a mark in the National Hockey League where general managers and everybody seems to say that what you have at that point is kind of what you got.
And lastly, Dennis, it looks like Adam Lowry won't go tonight, but a possibility for Saturday?
Possibility for Saturday, my guess is probably more Dallas on Monday. But you never know. We'll see how he got through a hard, hard skate the last couple of days, how he gets to the rink today, how he gets through today. And it's an off day for the team tomorrow, but my guess is that he'll get a skate in tomorrow, and they'll see how he is after the skate on Saturday morning. I don't think you'll see a decision on Adam Lowry until probably game day on Saturday, and they'll take it from there.
Thanks, Dennis. We appreciate it. Have a good call.
And on the other side, Matthew Perreault did skate yesterday by himself. So, and the expectation is that he'll be back with the team at either at the end of this week, which is nearing to an end quickly, or certainly on Sunday when the team prepares to practice and then fly off to Dallas.
Great stuff, Dennis. We appreciate it. Have a good call tonight.
See you, man. Take care.
Thanks, Dennis.
See you, Troy.
This was a presentation of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. Your NHL news and notes are next on the Anchor Products NHL Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Bertrand Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars on TSN 1290 tonight at 7 as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Jets hockey. Going to be another big Central Division battle. The Montreal Canadiens here on Saturday, and then the Jets go take on the Stars again Monday. Central Division flavor here on The Big Show. TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. We're going to talk some NFL as Week 9 gets underway in the next hour. Your other chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. And David Pagnotta, some more hockey talk at 8:30 today.
I like the schedule, the way they've got the Jets going back against teams they just played real recently. Huh? That's great for a rivalry and just to add a little bit of nastiness on that second game visiting back so quick.
It's Minnesota twice. You got Dallas twice now.
Same with Columbus.
Columbus twice. Pittsburgh twice. And now you're done with Pittsburgh and Columbus for the rest of the regular season. And then you go into Vegas and Arizona. And then you host Arizona. So Arizona is literally on back-to-back games with 2 days off in between. The Flyers are here, which is given win night, I believe.
Yeah, pylon night.
For Chicago last night, 3-0 shutout of the high flying Flyers.
Shutout.
Just adorable.
Then the New Jersey Devils. Then they go big time. Big time on the 20th, Nashville, 22nd in LA, 24th and 25th back to back in Anaheim.
That's a
and
tough
San Jose.
There's only one West. That's good for us. For the morning show, right? That West Coast swing. Two of their games are Friday, Saturday night. Ooh, I'm digging it, dude. Those are two wins for us.
The Anaheim game is 3 o'clock Central on the 24th, Friday.
Huh. Must be some sort of holiday down there, huh?
That's Thanksgiving. American Thanksgiving.
There you go.
It's settled.
Turkey Day.
Minnesota on the 27th in Winnipeg, and then another Central Division rival, the Colorado Avalanche, coming on the 29th, and that'll wrap up November. A big month, as Dennis Bayek was just saying. NHL news and notes on The Big Show, TSN 1290. Gentlemen, last night, Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid again. Was that a national televised game?
No, it wasn't.
That was a good rant, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. The NBC had to make sure to get the apparently the only team that's allowed to play in primetime, the Blackhawks. The old rivalry, Blackhawks-Flyers, teams from the East and West.
Crosby wins it again. Sidney Crosby and the Penguins are now 4-0 when they face Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers. McDavid did have 2 points, but the Oilers lose this battle 3-2. McDavid has 2 assists. One was unbelievable assist to Leon Draisaitl. If you haven't seen it, by all means, check it out at TSN.ca.
Ollie Mata still looking for his jockstrap somewhere in the slot.
So what do you make of this again? And we'll continue to do this when we do with the Leafs and Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine, of course, and all that comparisons. But Crosby 4-0 versus McDavid so far. The Penguins take another win over the Oilers 3-2 last night.
Yeah, well, neither of those two teams really playing at a extra special level, I suppose. But Edmonton's in a whole bunch of trouble right now. Huh? 3-7-1, 2-7-1 their last 10. They got a -12 goal diff. Nobody's happy. They were almost the little darling of the NHL and all kinds of people picking them to win the Pacific, get to the Cup final, all that sort of stuff. And they're nowhere near that right now. You just wonder how much can they recover? How much can they get back? We're talking about St. Louis looking like they're tucking away a playoff spot, while Edmonton's digging themselves a grave right now.
Yeah, and at some point, the it's early take gets thrown off for them, too. And this is, maybe it's just who they are. And look, the loss of Andre Sequeira basically slaughters their defensive depth, of which there wasn't a whole lot to begin with. And they've made some questionable moves in terms of the trade market the past couple of seasons. And the last kind of straw there was Eberle for Strome. And this is a team that cannot get any kind of secondary scoring. And Jordan Eberle, I know the playoffs didn't go super well for him, but he was a guy that would give you around 50, 55 points a season. And that's gone now. And Strome's not giving you anything right now. And Lucic isn't giving you anything.
It makes you ask a question like Chiarelli, right? Like, has this been a – has
– how much has Connor McDavid's brilliance overshadowed some real questionable managerial moves?
Yeah.
So say this doesn't turn around for the Oilers and they miss the playoffs.
Boy, oh boy, what a setback that would be.
Do heads roll there, or do they just – this was a bad season and chalk it up to that? Because they've built a good team –
have they, though? Like, really?
Well, I mean, they've brought in some good pieces. Well, you know what? That's a good question. Have they?
Is this
like, I said at the start of the year, I didn't. I know you had them as a favorite for the Stanley Cup.
They were the second favorite for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, and I never bought into that. I had the Calgary Flames, the best team in Alberta, just because I didn't like the Oilers' defense. And we walked through it, and we did this with the Leafs and the Jets and the Oilers and the Flames, and said who has the best forwards, who has the defense and the goaltending. When it came down to it, the Oilers dropped down a couple for me because I didn't like their defense, but I didn't know they'd have trouble scoring.
And Talbot would struggle, too.
Talbot's struggling. So say this, given the way that everybody said the Oilers would, and I'm not saying they're going to miss the playoffs, I'm just... with what McClellan has said the past couple of weeks, how he's handled his players.
He's really pushing them, right? Like, he's getting personal.
To me, he's bang on. Like, everything he says is true. It's rare right now to hear it in the National Hockey League. But if this team doesn't get in the playoffs, is this just a bad season and they look to augment and they're right back at it next year? Or do heads roll?
I think it's going to depend on Connor McDavid. And behind closed doors, when speaking with management, how happy or unhappy he is, specifically even with Todd McLennan. Like, it's going to be very interesting to see. If they were to finish out of the playoffs, that would be a massive step back. I don't know.
Well, we're looking at it right now, and we talk about November 23rd. The Edmonton Oilers have 7 points, and they are 4 points ahead of the Arizona Coyotes for last in the Western Conference. And they've played one more game in Minnesota, who's 3 points ahead of them.
Yep.
Well, one more lottery win, and that should probably allow them to build their team properly, right? Edmonton model my ass.
Who's first overall? They were lucky. We'll talk some NFL. Week 9 starts next on The Big Show, and Jeff Reinbold joins us here on TSN 1290 from the Royal Sports Studio.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Dallas Stars are in town to take on your Winnipeg Jets. As we bring you a Road Sport Auto Credit Jets hockey on TSN 1290 tonight at 7, Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns have the puck drop. Prior to that, at 3, the afternoon ride live from Boss Pizza City Place with Hustler and Rick Ralph, and then the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6 with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and the Huron Windows postgame show will also be live from Boss Pizza City Place with Olszewski and friends as well. Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open on the postgame show. It'll be open today at 9. Lots to talk about with the Jets and the Stars. Of course, the Astros win the World Series. The Bombers are starting Dan LeFever. And, of course, it's the start of Week 9 in the National Football League. The trade deadline made a lot of news. And to talk about it with us is our good friend, former CFL coach and current NFL analyst with Sky Sports in the UK, Mr. Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, how are you?
I'm awesome, guys. How's it in Manitoba today?
It's good. It's a little snowy and getting a little chilly, but that's what we expect at this time of the year. What were your thoughts on a very busy NFL trade deadline, which normally isn't the case?
Yeah, I think it was awesome. And if you're a fan, it certainly gave you a lot to chop up, you know. And I think when you look at the things that happened, and I'll go take it back to Marcel Darius' trade, which is actually before the deadline. But I think it was a situation where a lot of teams moved guys that maybe had kind of worn out their welcome in their city. Because you look at, like, for example, Jay Ajayi, for Miami to give him up for a fourth-round pick to the Eagles, you know, I think that was reflective more of Jay's frustration inside the offense and which boiled over a couple times on the sideline. I've watched him real close because he's actually from the UK, and you know, we've had him on our show a number of times, and I've gotten to know the kid. He's an intense competitor, and I think that the frustrations that he felt with his role in the offense were, and, you know, it just got to a point where Adam Gase and they just said, we're going to move on and go with these other guys. I think the same was true for different reasons. You know, that you're Houston, and, you know, you got a Pro Bowl left tackle in Brown, and you give him up for a DB that's been hurt and two draft choices to Seattle. You know, I think his contentious holdout was part of the start of that, and then his, you know, being so vocal about, you know, in reaction to what Bob McNair's comments about, you know, the prisoners running the prison. I think that got him out of Houston. And then I think, you know, it's interesting the Kelvin Benjamin deal in Carolina. I mean, Cam Newton's best buddy on the team and the guy that he points out is a week previous that if there was anybody I want to be in a foxhole with, it's Kelvin Benjamin. Well, then all of a sudden the organization trades that guy the next week and doesn't even tell you. Normally, and Troy will tell you this, a quarterback, the face of the franchise quarterback has kind of a special place in the organization. You're going to run those kinds of deals, you know, at least by him so that he's not blindsided by it. And they didn't do that in Carolina. So, again, I'm sure there's, you know, something inside that organization would make them do that because that's a big-bodied receiver. You don't lose assets when you're a division team and not gain them in a stretch drive.
Coach, with the pickup of Kelvin Benjamin and the fact of where the Buffalo Bills are at, they're playing tonight against the Jets. They're 5-2. They're looking pretty dang good. Your thoughts on where the Bills are at as an organization right now?
Well, I think they're for real, Troy. I think there are a couple things that they have done there that are, you know, I thought really, really great job by Bean and Sean McDermott in that. You know, they've made some pretty courageous decisions, really. You look at moving, you know, Woods, moving Watkins, moving Marcell Dareus. You know, those are three profile names that they've gotten out of there. And I think they have a real sense of what they want and the kind of players they want in that locker room and the kind of team that they want to be. Now, obviously emotion in football plays a role. Right? I'm not saying it trumps talent, but certainly it plays a role. And when you watch the Bills play, there was a play in the game the other day that I don't know if you guys saw it, where I can't remember who caught a pass and, you know, ran over a guy to get a first down. Now, it wasn't like one of those pivotal, critical plays in the game, but the Bills sideline just erupted like it was a college team. And, you know, I think what that speaks to is the kind of chemistry that they've developed there. They've been talented in Buffalo, particularly on defense. They've been talented. And I think, you know, Tyrod Taylor, frankly, doesn't get enough props for the plays that he can make. Now, you add Kelvin Benjamin to the mix, a big body, physical receiver who can, you know, make, you know, contested ball catches. I don't see any reason why they can't. They play defense now. They got the best defense in the AFC. So if you can play defense, you always got a chance. And, you know, so I don't see why not Buffalo.
You know, Jeff, why don't we see more of this? Why don't we see more of teams that are sort of on that bubble or turning things around make trades in the National Football League?
Well, first of all, they're hard to do, you know, because everybody's paranoid and you know, of making a trade and having it blow up in their face. And I think that moving the NFL has moved the trade deadline back, which I think has helped, you know, or encouraged teams to make trades. I don't think they can move it back any further because then you're going to get into that situation where teams just basically run a guy like the Astros took Verlander late to get him over the hump. And I don't know if that's what the league wants, but I think that, you know, you have to understand that it's a long, complex process to get a trade made. And how about the Browns, fellas? They got a trade made for McCarron. Cincinnati sends in their paper. Here's how it works. The two teams have to send in individual paperwork. And then if the legal look at that, and if language and all the points are the same in both sets of paperwork, then they make the trade. Then they put the stamp of approval on the trade. Well, Cleveland doesn't send their paperwork in. They're high-fiving in the office and jackassing around, and it gets past the deadline. Then they send the papers in like minutes after the deadline, and the NFL, which they should because you got to have rules, says, no, we're voiding the trade. So now it's become public that you tried to get A.J. McCarron, screwed it up because you were congratulating yourselves on getting the trade made. And, I mean, it's like, can that was like, oh, my goodness, the Browns have had it again.
Coach, for years the Saints have had nothing but Drew Brees in offense. And right now, points and yards, they got a mid-pack defense to complement that. What are your thoughts on what the Saints are doing defensively?
Well, you look at the guy that – there are a couple things about the Saints that strike you. Sean Payton has done a much better job, in my opinion, at playing complementary football. He's the play caller on offense and the head coach, so everything goes through him. In the past, it was throw, 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 and if Brees didn't throw for 480 yards and four touchdowns, they couldn't win. Now, you know, they've got two backs that can give them a lift. Kamara has been a real, real bright spot as a rookie for him. They can run the football. You look all the way back to the Jimmy Graham trade, right, where they get a Pro Bowl center for a tight end who won't block. And I think that was the start of them coming back offensively. They've changed their approach. They're now playing more complementary football. They draft Marshawn Lattimore, who gives them a real, real, you know, again, I hate to use that term shutdown corner because I think it's overused, but he truly is a great player. Kenny Vaccaro at safety has now started to play like the guy they drafted out of the University of Texas, the guy they anticipated they would get. Cameron Jordan gives you an elite pass rusher up front. So, you know, again, they're playing the best football that I have seen the Saints play since their Super Bowl championship year. If they get Delvin Bro back to play on the other side of Lattimore, they're going to be nasty now.
Former CFL coach and Sky Sports NFL analyst Jeff Reinbold joining us on the big show today on TSN 1290. It's a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the Dallas Stars are in town to take on the Winnipeg Jets. This is the big show, of course. Jeff, Josh Gordon's been reinstated. With the bye and everything that goes in, it looks like even if he does play, it won't be till week 13. What kind of an impact can he have given the fact that he's been off since 2014?
Well, you know, this is a really, really controversial and interesting situation. Here's a guy that three times has not been able to, you know, stay clean. All right. Now, guys, I'm no psychologist. I'm no addictions counselor or any other stuff. I do know this, that if you've got that problem, which he does, that problem never goes away. You're going to carry that problem to your grave. And I just think that for the Browns, with all the stuff swirling around him right now, this is a real risky guy to bring into your locker room. And I hope for him, and I hope for the league and for everybody in Josh Gordon's family and everybody associated with him, that he's able to keep himself sober and clean. But that is a very, very big risk. And, you know, again, I think if I'm the Browns, I'm taking this as I'm not counting on him. And if he gives us a lift, then that's fantastic. You know, week, whatever, I guess somewhere in 2 or 3 weeks he'll be able to play. You know, because the NFL reinstated him, but it's conditionally reinstated right now. He has some things he has to take care of. And again, you know, again, like I said, I'm pulling for the man. I'm pulling for the human being. But, you know, again, this is not a situation that's going to be easy for him.
Great stuff as always, Coach. We appreciate your time and enjoy week 9.
All right, fellas, aloha.
Mahalo, Coach. Thanks so much, man.
All right, brother.
I like that. Aloha.
Oh, yeah.
There's some interesting games this week. Atlanta, Carolina, 4-3 and 5-3. Trading of Benjamin, Kelvin Benjamin, Cam Newton says you can't replace him. Hmm. Things in Carolina are,
yeah.
I was going to say slowly, but rapidly picking up pace to going off the rails. Super Bowl team 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Interesting times. Anymore. Maybe that'll play into the weekly six-pack.
The old six-pack. Getting ready to bust out, it is.
David Pagnata will talk some more hockey with us on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day with the Stars in town at the bottom of the hour. But up next is your Hockey Nights in Vegas qualification. Second chance on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 to the Royal Sports Studio will be our next qualifier as TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners, and we have four of them and their guests, to Las Vegas this November when they'll see the Winnipeg Jets and the Golden Knights at the T-Mobile Arena on Friday, November the 10th, a week from tomorrow. Return airfare is part of the prize to and from Las Vegas. Free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Four nights accommodations right on the strip at the MGM Grand, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. And, of course, two tickets to the Jets and Golden Knights once again at the T-Mobile Arena a week from tomorrow, Friday, November the 10th. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. This is your third final chance on The Big Show. Two more tomorrow, and then that's it. You also have some opportunities today and tomorrow at 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and today and tomorrow at 5:15 in the afternoon on the Afternoon Ride with Andrew Hustler-Patterson and Mr. Rick Ralph. Also, a bonus chance to qualify online coming up. Pay attention to our TSN 1290 Facebook page for that. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Our next grand prize announcement is coming up on November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca.
Can we cut the crap here, and can we not play Sin City by AC/DC under all of that? How much better would that sound? Like, how much more revved up would everybody be? Come on.
Hockey Nights in Vegas. Presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, TSN 1290, and unofficially by the jam Sin City by AC. Yeah,
let's go.
DC.
Let's wake up here.
I told you my story of stumbling. Not stumbling. Sorry. Oh, yeah. I misrepresented myself. Walking back to the hotel one fine morning in Vegas, seeing a $2.99 breakfast special with Elvis. And there was a
$2.99.
Two tables of seniors couples, one lonely guy, and myself in this big lounge room, and steak and eggs, $2.99, and out comes Wise Men Say.
It's a long way from Sin City, AC/DC.
How's your eggs, man? They're good. Only fools rush in. Steak is tender. Yeah, he's walking back. He's walking back and forth on the stage. I was front row. At this table. It was awesome. Where was it? Was it
and
the
you're,
Flamingo?
You're alone,
I don't know.
You're alone but not lonely in Vegas at 7 in the morning eating steak.
You got
and
Elvis
eggs.
On your side and some steak and eggs.
Goodness.
And you're starting the day off right.
Goodness only knows what happened in the hours leading to that 7 a.m. breakfast or whatever that is.
It all leads to Elvis. Al was our first qualifier today on The Big Show. Who's our next one?
It is David Johnson.
David Johnson. Congratulations.
David Johnson. Yeah!
David Johnson, the big guy, qualifying. You get a Jets Gear gift card just for doing so, and you are in for the final grand prize draw on November the 6th, Monday. I'm excited for this. I'm excited. And then it's off. Then, like, literally, you're off a couple days later to Vegas.
Yeah. Right to the tarmac. On that chartered luxury plane that we're all going to be on. We're coming with you.
Are you going?
We're all going.
We're all going.
Yeah.
Troy is
Brooksy, going. Our boss. Brooksy sending us all.
Brooksy. I guess that's what I'm saying then, Brooksy. Well, then why don't you? That's what Brooksy's going to say. He's going to give us a tortorella for sure. It's going to be an exciting time for all five of our grand prize winners and their guests, of course, and taking on the Jets for the first time in Las Vegas, courtesy of our friends at RedTag.ca and us here at TSN 1290.
They can score, huh? Vegas wasn't supposed to be able to score.
The goaltending is amazing to me, how they've gone this far down the depth chart. Like, I can't remember, and I think it's focused on more because they're an expansion team and we're still waiting for this to sort of fail. But name me a team that was four goalies deep the first month of the season. Well, yeah, I can't remember.
Four goalies in 10 games, right? But they got 41 goals in 11 games, man. Where'd that come? That's the shocker. Somehow that's even more shocking to me than rifling through four goalies in 10 games. Like, that was not supposed to be a part of it. Everybody was asking, how are they going to score? Well, I know, but they're scoring.
I think we're also finding out about the Vegas Cubs? Home ice advantage. not a myth. Not a myth. And what do you know? They go out on the road, they get pummeled in New York back-to-back nights.
Somebody once told me it's harder not to score in Vegas than it is even for you, Toth.
You had to take it there, huh?
It was hard, though. It's still hard to score in any level of the National Hockey League or any team. Bertrand Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. We'll find out tonight on TSN 1290 as we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey. If the Winnipeg Jets can score on Ben Bishop and the Dallas Stars. We'll get into that game much more, of course, and get your thoughts on it. Ben Bishop and Connor Hellebuck, your goaltenders for tonight's game on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9. Up next, more NHL hockey talk with our good friend from thefourthperiod.com, David Pagnata, when he joins the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Saturday, November the 4th, that's this Saturday, all Tommy Gunn's original barbershop locations across Canada will participate in Cuts for Nuts, an event in support of testicular cancer research. During the Cuts for Nuts events, $10 from every haircut or shave will be donated to the Movember Foundation. The Movember Foundation funds innovative research. They aim to stop men from dying too young. According to the foundation, testicular cancer strikes early. It is the most common cancer in men under 40, and diagnosis rates have doubled in the last 50 years. For more information, go to TommyGunns.com/cutsfornuts for more on that. We have Road Sport Auto Credit Jets hockey on the station tonight at 7 o'clock as the Dallas Stars are in town to face the Winnipeg Jets for a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets at game day. This is the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki, and we're going to talk some more NHL and maybe get some thoughts on the Jets from Mr. David Pagnata of thefourthperiod.com. David, how are you today?
Pretty good, boys. How's it going?
We're doing well. Another big Central Division battle tonight for the Winnipeg Jets, and I guess we'll just start there. What were your impressions of Winnipeg's month of October in the National Hockey League?
Well, they were. They're kind of along the lines of what a lot of people had anticipated, myself included. You know, I know I'd come on the show before and talked about the consistency that needed to be there for the Jets this season, and we've been seeing it. We've been seeing it more. In the depth of the offense, even though, you know, we don't have Patrick Laine scoring every game and things like that, they're spreading things out, which is what they need to do and what the Jets should be doing in order to be competitive this season and to do well. They needed to have stable goaltending, and they got it. And Connor Hellebuck right now, and you know, when you bring in Steve Mason, you hoped that he would effectively be the guy to take charge and take over as not necessarily a clear-cut number one, but somebody that was going to get the bulk of the load, you know, between him and Hellebuck. And it seems like the roles have reversed right now, and you're going with the hot hand and somebody that in Hellebuck that, you know, he keeps his pace up. He's effectively going to lead the charge between the pipes for them. You keep that up. Defense is improving. Offense, as I mentioned, is there. It's a well-rounded kind of attack right now that the Jets have, and it's certainly poised to increase based on, you know, just how things are going throughout the course of the season. Things tend to even themselves out. And if Patrick Laine, for example, is a player that hasn't gotten off to the hottest of starts, but a pretty solid one nonetheless, we're going to see his play increase, and that should boost certainly the rest of the team. It's a well-balanced attack right now, and it certainly looks like it's going to continue and get better.
David, what lies ahead here for Les Canadiens?
I think it's going to be riding through it. I think they want to see, especially tonight, how things go in Minnesota. The back-to-back games over the weekend. This is going to be these next few games are really going to be the test. You know, they've won their last two. They've been scoring better. The game against the New York Rangers, the first W that they got in these two, 5-4, they had a solid lead. They let it slip away, but they managed to get back into it. And then they just ran over the Ottawa Senators on Monday in an 8-3 win. So now you get a few days off. You head to Minnesota. You've got a couple more games coming up on Saturday and Sunday. This is going to be the real test for the Habs to see what direction they're going to go in the rest of the season, ultimately. And they're going to ride things out, obviously, right now with the squad that they've got. I still don't like, I talked about consistency in the performance of the Jets. I don't like the consistency that's been going on with the Canadiens in terms of their lineup. There's too much shuffling and juggling. It's hard to criticize a coach who's been one of the best in the last 10 years in Claude Julien, but I'd like to see a little bit more. I know he's been searching for the right, bits of chemistry, but I want to see a little bit more consistency in the lineup and how things go. And, Alex Galchenyuk, for example, 3 goals in his last 4 games, but he's, played just over 10 minutes a night the last 2. You wonder, is this going to be, all right, was that a bit of a test for him? Are you going to give him more minutes? I think these next few games are also going to dictate his potential future with the Canadiens as well.
David, what have you seen that's been so successful for the LA Kings this year, and how much credit does John Stevens get for it?
He gets a lot, but I think the main difference here with the LA Kings, and I've been around this team a lot since 2011. Not there every day. Obviously, I'm based here in Toronto, but I'm down in Los Angeles a lot and have been, and I've had a chance to see this team over these last 6 years and how they've gone through the good years. Excuse me, in 2012 and 2014, even 2013, losing in the conference final. During that stretch, and then after the fact. And the last couple of seasons for the LA Kings, it just wasn't fun, and it wasn't enjoyable. And a lot of the guys that I've spoken to, they would literally get up in the morning and dread having to get to the rink for practice. It was that bad of a situation that had evolved within that room and under Daryl Sutter. And I don't want to throw, a great coach like that under the bus too badly, but the last couple of years for the LA Kings under Daryl Sutter, it just wasn't working. And the players did not respond well to him. And now that he's gone, they make the change with Dean Lombardi at the GM position. Rob Blake comes in at the top, promoted to that position. John Stevens promoted to head coach. It's a much more loose environment. The guys are happy again. They're excited again. You could be making $100 million a year, but if you absolutely dread what you're doing and hate it, it really doesn't matter. These guys have gotten a huge lift off their shoulders and are just playing better because of it. And that's been the biggest difference for this team. That, plus the fact that John Stevens has recognized that he needs to instill some quality youth into this lineup to spread their depth around. And Alex Iafallo playing on the first line with Anze Kopitar and a rejuvenated Dustin Brown, and I guess a rejuvenated Kopitar as well, has allowed for a lot of creative chances and offensive chances. He hasn't been scoring much. It hasn't got a lot of points, but he's been creating some plays to allow Kopitar and Brown to get going. Adrian Kempe, who's now come up and basically taken over in the second seed role up the middle because he's had to because of the Jeff Carter injury, he's, stepped up to the next point of his career. So the fact that they're able to instill some offense and that we see guys like Brown and Drew Doughty and Jonathan Quick feeling a lot better and a lot more excited to get to the rink, it's played a huge factor in how these guys have performed. And it'll be, interesting for them tonight. They've got a test against the Maple Leafs, a team that won yesterday in Anaheim, a team that they lost to last week. I'm interested to see how they're going to bounce back for in a situation like that, given all the changes that has happened for this club.
David, 20 years ago, if you would have told someone, yeah, the NFL will be expanding over to London sometime soon, you get laughed out of rooms and such, right? But the NFL themselves have come out and said within 5 years they expect to have a team in London. We know the NHL is sort of targeting China right now. The Sens and the Avs going to Stockholm, Sweden next Friday and Saturday to sort of push the whole global aspect of the NHL. You're heading over there to take in that game. What are your thoughts on maybe what the future might hold here from a global standpoint for the NHL and what you've seen over there in a previous trip that you took back in 2010, I believe?
Yeah, the game has – I'm interested to see because it's been, you know, 6 years, 7 years rather – since I've been over to Stockholm, I'm interested to see how the NHL mindset over there has changed. And talking to some people over there and some players, it's increased. The league has done more to polarize the sport and the league itself in European markets, specific European markets, and they've really escalated things in the Asian market, specifically obviously China. And I don't think they're going to go down that road. I would be very surprised if they go down that road with regards to, you know, similar direction like the NFL. You're probably looking at maybe 15, 20 years from now if they go down in that respect. But their goal has been they want to keep this up. They don't want this to be a one-off. They want to do this every year. They're going to do China again. It was a three-year deal for them to go over. So the plan is to go again next season, whether it's going to be the start of the season or preseason. They still haven't figured that out. They want to go back to Europe after these two games next Friday and Saturday in Stockholm. They want to keep this up. They've been talking about doing a little Ryder Cup style series in Europe, somewhere in Europe, for the last, you know, 4 years, and they're still talking about it. They're trying to make some adjustments. And I know there was a report recently that came out that they're toying with the idea again, which they are. But I think that's the extent of you know, what they want to do in terms of globalizing the league. Not so much the sport, because it is obviously a global sport, but the brand itself with the NHL and its players. And the most interesting thing to me is that they've been utilizing, especially in the European markets, the athletes to help promote the game, which is not something you see in North America. It's promoting the team. But you need to do that in the European markets. You need to promote the crap out of the fact that Erik Karlsson's going to be playing with the Ottawa Senators and Gabe Landeskog's going to be playing with the Avs. So they're doing they did a good job in you know, 2008, 2009, 2010. Obviously the lockout and a few other factors came into play. Now it's them feeling that this is the direction they need to go in. There's going to be expansion talk and relocation talk and stuff like that, but that'll stick to, you know, Seattle, Quebec City, Houston, and things like that. But in terms of the brand overseas on either direction of the pond, this is their goal. They want to do this, these kinds of series and these kinds of mini games, regular season-wise, though they mean something on an annual basis.
David Pagnotta, thefourthperiod.com, joining us on the big show today. It's a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars on TSN 1290 tonight at 7. David, we're hypothetically speaking about the Oilers this morning and saying if it doesn't go well, like if they just don't make the playoffs, does anything happen there, or do they just go, it was a bad season, and continue to augment? Or will some heads roll if this Oilers team doesn't get into the postseason?
Well, they're starting to roll now. there's a little bit of confusion and disappointment as to what's been going on, and a lot of it has to deal with the lack of offense that's kind of been coming out of this group. And, you know, there's only so much you can put on Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and things like that, or players like that, rather. You've got to be able to spread things out. And if you look at this team, outside of them, outside of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, you know, Patrick Maroon has been playing well with these guys, but, excuse me, it's not enough. Milan Lucic, you know, it's not enough. They need to spread their offense around, and they just don't have that type of depth to get it done. And now that you've got a full year of Connor McDavid just absolutely dominating the league from last season, the plan of attack against him has changed. It's different. And, you know, when you're putting more people and more pressure on him, even though sometimes it doesn't matter, like the assist he picked up last night, but this is a player that, you know, he'll get you a goal or two a game, but you need to spread things out. You need to you've got to be able to create some additional chances. They're tinkering their blue line still. Cam Talbot has not been as steady, and he had a tough start to the season last season, and really the Oilers did. So it could just be a matter of them going through that bit of an early rut off the bat, and then taking things from there. But I can tell you, they're already looking. They've been looking to, you know, see where they could find some outside assistance to provide some scoring depth on the second and third lines. They're looking at some ways of doing that. Peter Chiarelli, their general manager, is exploring. I don't think anything is imminent, but you know, he's out there, he's looking, and he's trying to add an extra jolt to this lineup outside of, you know, the number 97 and I guess Leon Draisaitl as well. But this is going to be a situation that is going to be, you know, really, really looked at and investigated for the Edmonton Oilers brass. And if they can't turn things around in this month, then we could see some interesting changes take place, because, you know, they're about $8.5 million below the cap right now in terms of overall, you know, season salary cap. I think prorated it's about $10.5 million at this stage. But based on the roster right now, you've got $12.5 million to Connor McDavid kicking in for next season. That'll put them over. They've got to make some changes for next season. I don't think it'll happen to that extent in terms of the magnitude of a significant player moving out mid-season at this point. But that's something that's in the back of their minds as well, because the landscape of their roster is going to change next season, whether they want to or not. Somebody with a hefty salary is going to have to move out. And this month will dictate, I guess, how quickly that could happen. I don't anticipate it, because I expect them to get out of this little funk that they're in. But if for whatever the reason they maintain this course of play throughout the rest of November, we could see some interesting things happening in you know, Edmonton.
Great stuff as always, David. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the rest of your day.
You too, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, David. Take care, bro.
We will tee up the Boston Pizza fan line when we come back to the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio at TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect Four menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your stations, always free on the iHeartRadio app. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. The puck drops tonight at 7 for Road Sport Auto Credit Jets hockey. Brian Munns will be along with the call of Paul Edmonds tonight as the Dallas Stars visit the Winnipeg Jets. So lots to get to in the Boss Pizza fan line, and we'll start with that. Your impressions, your thoughts, your expectations of the Central Division battle, the first of two in three games for the Jets and the Dallas Stars.
Well, it should be a heck of a beauty. There's no doubt in that. All the exciting changes for the Dallas Stars arrive tonight. And, of course, when you got that top line of Ben Seguin and Radulov, it's look out. Their special teams are just flat-out stupid, peeps. Their power play is first, operating in a godly 30.8%. Their penalty kill is second in the NHL at a ridiculous 90.5%. You're somewhere around 100 or sniffing over 100. That's supposed to be solid and acceptable for special teams. And the Stars are putting together a 121.3 right now. It's ridiculous. So any level of special teams, stay out of the sin bin, boys, or it's going to get ugly in a hurry. If you want to test that level of success that's been enjoyed here over the last little bit, and the Jets actually, over the last 14 games, have killed 15 of their last 16. They're sixth in the NHL since October 8th, according to a release from the Jets that look at some of those stats and stuff. So they've been impressive as of late. Do not tempt the power play of the Stars, and it should be a beauty game.
Yeah, and 5-on-5, the Stars are one of the more effective teams in the NHL, too. So this should be just a fine and dandy night for the Jets at Bell MTS Place. Yeah, but you know what? I'd like to see the Jets open it up a little. Like, I don't know. The offense, I know the Pittsburgh first period happened, but the Jets don't throw a lot of shots towards the net. Mm-hmm. And
well,
I wonder,
at their bottom nine.
Yeah, bottom six, right?
I meant bottom six.
Sir. Yeah. bottom I was going to say, Line 8 Eilers have been pretty,
harsh.
Yeah. But I don't know. They're just not getting enough shots, enough offense. They're spending way too much time in their own zone so far this season. I just wonder if they can open it up a little bit without completely leaving themselves.
You are dancing a fine line when you're talking about the Jets, who have given up one goal in regulation for four straight games, and you want them to open it up a bit?
Well, how realistic is them being the 30th ranked team in terms of possession, in terms of expected goals for? How realistic is that going to be to success moving forward? They're going to have to score. They're going to have to shoot more. It's that simple. You can't expect Connor Hellebuyck to have a .940 save percentage the rest of the season.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I just feel like that'll come. Like, I don't feel like Patrick Laine is going to go another four games without scoring. And maybe I'm naive. I think the scoring will come. I just, giving up one goal in regulation in the past four games, I think that's what this team needs to focus on. Is continuing that? No?
Giving up one goal in...
Well, just the defensive structure there of, yeah, the offense isn't flying high and all that, but... Like, even the Minnesota game, the last 8 minutes, they were under siege.
Well, and you escaped. Like, they escaped Minnesota. You don't want to be under siege to that degree. You don't want to. And Paul Murray said that, right? That's not exactly what they wanted to do. But it's a fair. There is a debate there to be had in what Wicks is saying. It is interesting. You're looking at like three of their last four wins, 2-1 wins, right? And two of them coming in overtime. So, I'm all for it. Just look sound across the board. Put the D in decent defense and score when. We know, though, that this is a two-trick pony as far as our two-situation, right? Or the two lines. Those two lines, you got to produce like crazy because you know their bottom six isn't going to complement very much. And I don't know how much different Dallas is from that, actually.
What would you like to see from the Jets to increase the offense starting tonight against the Dallas Stars? 780-1290, the Boss Pizza fan line. The Houston Astros have won their first World Series in their 56-year history. They beat the Dodgers in Game 7, 5-1. Your thoughts on that? George Springer was named Most Valuable Player. 2014 cover of Sports Illustrated, they put George Springer of the Astros on it and said, "You're 2017 World Series champions," and actually nailed the MVP of the series as well. Analytically, they went about this, and then they mix that in with A.J. Hinch's gut feelings. Your thoughts on them and the Dodgers, and of course the Blue Bombers going with Dan LeFevre tomorrow night in Calgary for the final regular season game.
Maybe that cover, that SI cover, can get us all excited about the hockey news cover with the Jets last
Well,
year, right?
I saw that tweeted side by side several times. Your 2019 Stanley Cup champs, your 2017 World Series champs. Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show from the Royal Sports Studio on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Road Sport Auto Credit Jets hockey on the station tonight at 7 between the Winnipeg Jets and the Dallas Stars on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Paul Edmonds, Brian Munns on the call. Full pregame coverage at 3 o'clock on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph live from Boss Pizza City Place. Kevin Olszewski and friends have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show at 6. And right after the game, there'll be a Boss Pizza City Place live once again with the Huron Windows post-game show. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open then at 780-1290, and it's open right now here on The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki from the Royal Sports Studios, talking Jets, Stars. We're talking about how to get the Jets offense going. What would you like to see for them to do that? And, of course, the World Series last night, the Astros take Game 7. Your impressions on that? And the Blue Bombers going with Dan LeFevre as their starting quarterback heading into the last game of the regular season in Calgary tomorrow night. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jeff, you're kicking us off today. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good, thank you. I'm going to say something that I'm kind of uncomfortable saying, but I completely agree with Troy's take from a couple of days ago that the power play is killing us, and I don't want to pick on Dustin Byfuglien because Lord knows that's a thing to do right now, but our worst skater is bringing the puck up on the power play. And quite frankly, it's a little bit confusing as to why so many of us are watching the games and we can see that Bufflin, bless his heart, can't skate for beans, and yet he continues to get 25 minutes of ice time. Because of all the pressure that they generate and all the speed that they use, they draw the penalties and then do nothing with it on the power play because they don't use their best zone entry guy to bring the puck up. And he's got that cannon of a shot, which is great, but hit the damn net. So that's my take on it. Anyway, they're doing some great things to generate power play opportunities, but they're then wasting them by having Bufflin bring the puck up.
Yeah, and the Dustin Bufflin bringing the puck up on the power play, he is not the focus of actually bringing the puck up. That some teams use that, and they got the two guys behind them or one guy behind them. Normally it's two guys behind them, which is what the Jets do. And most times, unless Dustin Bufflin reads that he's got his own entry, he dishes it off to one of the guys behind him. But I will agree with you, and I got stopped 3-4 times yesterday just walking around the city, people agreeing with the whole thing on the power play with Nikolaj Ehlers, how people are just absolutely mystified that he's not on that top power play, especially for zone entry. And then, of course, once you're in that zone, the magic aspect that he's got with the puck and the inherent already chemistry that exists with Laine. So that will be – and I told someone yesterday, they said the deal with Patrick Laine. I said, is it a sophomore – when people are talking about a potential sophomore slump here, what are the chances he breaks out of that slump once Ehlers is put on that top power play?
Yeah, I don't know if putting Ehlers on the top – I agree with doing it, but I don't know if that solves the power play's woes. Having said that,
it's
as well, though,
it's going to solve it a lot more than putting Laine in the middle of the 1-3-1.
Well, that is ridiculous, right? I mean, I don't think I'll understand ever moving Laine off the one-time side. But the Jets, one of their main issues is their entries are terrible. Mm-hmm. They're just awful. They don't have speed. It's just kind of this slow lollygag up the ice.
Which, that's the start, that's Bufflin right away, right? He's always slowish at least coming up to start the whole thing even.
And then even after that, though, you have – it's generally Wheeler and Scheifele are the two guys back that you kind of try and generate speed with, but they're coming up without much speed as well, and it's just it's so easy as a PK to set up near the blue line, and your options at that point are turn it over at the blue line or – dump and chase, and a dump and chase on the power play that's already a win for the PK.
It's damn near a specialty. That's that can almost damn near be considered a specialty of Nikolaj Ehlers at this point in time. He is so
it's what he does best.
Head and shoulders above everybody else on the team, better at it.
Yeah, I mean, the Ehlers thing, he's definitely the guy who gains a zone the best, and he's got the skill and the speed to do it. I don't know if Dustin Bufflin's designed to bring it up every time, and when he does, whoever brings it up is looking for that forward to...
Like the drop pass,
right? The drop pass to let them gain the zone. Like, it's whether it's Bufflin or the other D-man who's out there, it's their job to find the forward to do it. So I don't think it's the focal point of gaining the zone is through Dustin Bufflin. But the power play's struggling. Like, it's... And on Twitter here, we're getting some – you can also tweet us your thoughts and comments or text at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. But Brian says the what I don't want to see is Paul Maurice putting Patrick Laine in the middle of the power play anymore.
Yeah.
And Eric Bayer on Twitter says he agrees with Brandon, can't continue to be under siege, need more time in the offensive zone and how to sustain that.
Totally. So, yeah. And I said that yesterday after the game, right? Like the way that they were coming out, once they were able to escape the zone – and then they get over the blue line and float some sort of soft horse crap pass towards the net and lose puck possession. Instead of maintaining puck possession, get it down low, cycle, 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 grind, 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 take 10, 15 seconds off and battle for it down low. I just didn't understand their mindset whatsoever. It was crazy. It was ridiculous. It just didn't make any sense whatsoever.
Thanks for the call, Jeff. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
It is Norm.
Norm, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Good morning, Jim. Your Astros won. I love it.
Woo!
I love it, too. It's awesome, man. And
I might get an eviction notice from my condo when I get home for all the yelling last night.
Awesome, man. I'm very happy for
awesome.
You, man.
Yeah, it's not awesome. I got a pool. Go ahead.
I was going to say about the Bombers. To me, it almost seems like they're playing for this playoff game at home. But you know what? We as fans deserve a Grey Cup. That's what I want from the Bombers. And, boy, we sure were looking good there. And it sure would be sad if we didn't make it to the big one. And I'll hang up, guys.
You know, Norm, that's a great – thanks for the call on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the big show today, TSN 1290. That's a great point because, look, we don't know what's going to happen. They got a game in Calgary. We'll see what they are health-wise, where they play or whom they play come playoff time. But is it the injuries that could derail this season? Or did – because they were a playoff team – they're the second-best team in the CFL, and now with the way this past month has gone, do you think they were a Grey Cup contending team with the defense? In a one game, I think they could. I think they could get to the Grey Cup. I wouldn't have them the favorite if they were healthy, but now that they're not healthy, has just stuff out of their control derailed this chance at a Grey Cup championship this year?
Oh, man, they would need to be pulling horseshoes out of their arse like no one's business, in my opinion, to get to the Grey Cup. You know, I've been talking all year long the setup for them going to Calgary, right? Like that was the game that you project to. Obviously, that's the road to the Grey Cup in the West goes through Cowtown. And when you start comparing the two teams, and I've said from day one, Matt Nichols and the offense is going to wreak more havoc on the Calgary defense than Bo Levi Mitchell and the offense is against the Bomber defense, huh? Really? Really? The chances of that happening, there was, and I brought this up as well, a number of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, Saskatchewan were huge underdogs going into Calgary for a West final. Calgary had 7 turnovers in the game, and Saskatchewan won the game. That would be, with the Bombers' defense the way it is right now, that would be the only way the Bombers could go into Calgary and win a playoff game by some gross win in the turnover battle. +4 or +5, something like that.
Even totally healthy.
Hell yeah. Their defense still sucks totally healthy. Leg it in, leg it out, they suck.
But their offense isn't rolling, and Bo Levi Mitchell is nowhere near what we expect.
They're still number two scoring team in the CFL, man. Like that's people, you know. I know Bo Levi Mitchell's struggling, man, but they are the second highest scoring team in the CFL still with 30.5 points per game. Winnipeg is still number one, but Calgary is not that bad. All right, they're superior in turnover ratio, and they're close to points off of turnovers, and like they're in all the offensive categories that the Bombers are considered to be strong, and Calgary's still sniffing right there. And then you go to the other side of the ledger, and it's 1-9. Calgary 1, Winnipeg 9. Defensively, it's frightening, terrifying to look at the difference there. So they would need a miracle via turnovers to happen for the Bombers to get to the Grey Cup, healthy or not. So I think it's a year early. If they do it, hey, man, then something miraculous has happened, and bow down to the football gods. But they're not. This defense isn't ready to go win a championship. No freaking way. 8 explosion plays surrendered last week. 8.
Well, I don't think they have a chance now.
They were given 4 up a few weeks ago, and that was horrendous.
Yeah, but without Mo Leggett and all those guys, I don't have now. But when
not all those guys, it's Mo Leggett.
When they were held, like, I don't think Calgary comes out of the West anymore. If you ask me to pick a favorite, it's Edmonton.
I wonder what.
And I bet Saskatchewan could take Calgary out. So if the Bombers were healthy, like 100%, I think they would have a chance just as much as Saskatchewan or Edmonton would.
Edmonton will not be favorites in the West Final if they get there. No one, the Calgary Stampeders will be the favorite.
Well, I'm not saying the favorite. I'm just saying I think that they can beat them.
You just said you think they're coming out of the West. Good luck going into Calgary and winning. Calgary will have to crap the bed. And for sure,
it's possible,
right now with the defense, like Edmonton's got a better chance, and certainly Saskatchewan would have a better chance right now than Winnipeg does.
And the injuries have – look, they play the ultimate factor maybe in all this, because without Mo Leggett, it becomes Mount Everest almost for the Bombers to
Even
try and pull out
though,
a win.
Man, that is grossly overrated. They sucked with Mo Leggett in there.
True, but – healthy, he is. You got Alex Singleton, but after that, where would you rank him in terms of top defensive players in the CFL? My whole point is that the Bombers' Achilles heel this year wasn't the injuries, and it wasn't the defensive players. Ultimately, it was Mike O'Shea's decision to keep Richie Hall when the defense showed
for way too big of a sample size that they just weren't good enough to get the job done. It's just something you can't change. You couldn't change it midway through the season. You can't really change it now. You just it's something that this team, when next year they will be looking at their season as Grey Cup or bust.
Yeah.
You know, it's sad and it sucks after the season that they had, but it's just only something you can fix in the off season.
Yeah, I'm not saying even when they were healthy that they had a good defense, but their offense I think could outscore the Calgary offense, and then your chances.
But when you say that, Jim, you're saying that Nichols against Calgary's D will outscore Bo Levi against Winnipeg's D, and that's an insane statement.
I just
said they'd outscore them.
I think they could outscore the Calgary offense, yes.
But you got to remember, to outscore Calgary's offense, brother, that means that Nichols, that's against Calgary's defense.
Yes.
And Bo Levi against Winnipeg's defense.
Yes.
And I think that's an insane statement.
And I think they could get some turnovers. I'm not saying it would happen if they were healthy. I'm saying I think there's a better shot than ever. Look at the last time they went into Calgary. Last year, they lost on the last play of the game. And this is a better team than it was then. I just don't see I understand Calgary is the number one team in the West. I don't think the difference between the teams in the West is as great as everybody thinks it used to be.
The difference between the defenses of Calgary and Winnipeg is massive.
For sure. And the Bombers have a better offense than Calgary. Do they not?
No.
Calgary's more.
Calgary's actually got a better net offense than the Bombers, and the Bombers average 0.7 points more than Calgary per game.
We'll get to your thoughts on this, and of course, a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as the puck drops on Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey tonight at 7 between the Stars and the Jets. Lots to get your opinions on at TSN 1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-780-1290 next.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them soon. The Boston Pizza Fan Line is open, 780-1290. Your thoughts on the Jets and Stars tonight as we bring you a Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Stars tonight at 7. We're also talking about the Bombers. And Dan Lefevre gets the call for them tomorrow in Calgary. We were hypothetically talking about if the Bombers were fully healthy, if they would have a shot at actually winning the Grey Cup this year, in your mind. Once they were playoff bound. The World Series was last night. The Astros take Game 7. Where do you rank that World Series? Was it the best or one of the best World Series ever? And anything else you wish to weigh in on? 780-1290 or text us at 1290-90 as well, with standard message rates applying. Back to the Jets and how they fix their power play. That's been another topic of discussion. Rob weighed in with, the Jets are 1-3 on Tuesday. I don't care what the stats said, that goal should have counted. So he's giving them credit for a power play goal, even though it didn't count.
Sure, that was so ridiculous, huh? To have for it to be non-reviewable, and how the number of problems the NHL would fix in reviewing every single goal scored, right? And pick your time frame prior, like establish a time or an event where with possession in the offensive zone to start the review, and 98% of the time, fans wouldn't even notice that the league is reviewing it, right? It would be very seldom that there'd be an interruption in play because command center is confirming something. That would have been one of those times, and you get it right. Like, what in the hell is so hard to figure out how much that helps your game?
I fully agree with you on the, like, you could very easily review every goal even before the next face-off,
yeah,
after the goal has taken place. However, on that play specifically, it wasn't in dispute of whether it was a goal or not. The dispute was whether it was a hand pass or not. And so I don't
know.
Sure,
but that would be a part of the process of reviewing every goal scored.
Well, that then you're reviewing the actual play call as opposed to the goal itself, because it wasn't allowed. Like, it wasn't in question the goal. The goal what was in question was whether it was a hand pass or not.
Well, which is directly linked to them scoring, JT. So
I know, but if you're reviewing every goal, can you also review the call prior to the goal?
I think when it's
that's where it
I
gets
think
when
the, I like what Dennis said. When the puck goes in the net, review it.
Yeah.
Puck went in the net, review it.
And just blindly be able to review everything prior.
Just like the NFL. They review every single scoring play. It's not just simply the line crossing the ball crossing the goal line. You're looking at pretty much everything. So just pick a spot prior to it and watch it quickly, just because 98% of like there's no debate. It's just once in a blue moon like this.
And it's not like a goal is scored and they'll go back 40 seconds and be like, oh, wait, there might have been a high stick there, right? It would be kind of confined to that exact play right before the puck goes in, generally.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, what we're talking about possibly is then reviewing a goal and then going, well, it's a good goal, but there was a slash as he was shooting that, so it's a penalty or...
No. You wouldn't be reviewing things like that. You'd be... Like, not those types of – you wouldn't be reviewing for a slash, right?
It would be like for high sticks, glove passes, kicks, goalie interference.
Yes.
What about? Well, that's another example. What if that goal's in and they're reviewing it as they review all goals and they go, well, that's a goal, but Myers also had goaltender interference that wasn't
called. That's
fair.
Different. That's
so now you pull
included.
Off the goal?
Yeah, that's fair.
Interesting. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Duncan.
Duncan, you're on the show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I've been listening to the show for quite some time now, and I want to say it's a good show. Appreciate you guys on the air there.
Thank you.
A couple comments here. Over the past couple days, talking about the power play and line A slow start, and let's play a hypothetical, and line A has two power play goals. Myers puts that one in that was disallowed, and the Jets are sitting with a over 20% power play. What are your thoughts on that? So then we're not discussing any of these things. And probably if that happens, the Jets are not sitting, probably sitting with one less loss. What are your thoughts on that scenario there?
My initial thought is I'm not, I know I should be given the numbers, but I'm not worried about the power play. I think that there's so much firepower on here that eventually it's going to start clicking.
I think, first of all, to theorize over a hypothetical is kind of weird to me. Like, it's, you know, if there's a couple sayings about ifs, right? I just about said one that would probably get me in trouble, but there's you can't, how do you if your way up to three more power play goals? I know that one should have been a goal, and I can wrap my mind around that one, but there's just inherently, specifically maybe, is not having, I just don't understand not having Ehler specifically to make your power play. Like tonight, for instance, on a power play that is running along, clipping along at 30%, you know, the Dallas Stars could separate and mix up Ben Sagan and Radulov somehow, right? Klingberg's their best defenseman, their most offensive guy. So what do they have? What do they bring to the table on the first power play? Ben, Radulov, Sagan, Klingberg, and Short, similar to the Pittsburgh power plays. Like, here is our talent. You're going to be dealing with it for something over a minute per power play. Let's see how you deal with it. So I just don't understand the sort of the stubbornness involved or what Paul Maurice is trying to prove by having your best zone entry guy and arguably your best playmaker. Why do you have him on your second team power play? It's flat out stupid to me.
We'll talk a little bit more about this and take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290 when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290 from the Royal Sports Studio.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. The afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph live from Boston Pizza City Place at 3 o'clock. Kevin Olszewski has a Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from BP City Place as well at 6. And then we bring you Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey with the Dallas Stars in town at 7 with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call and the Huron Windows postgame show We'll be live from BP City Place as well to wrap it all up for you. The Boss Pizza fan line is open with Jim Tolfe, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rowicki live from the Royal Sports Studio here on TSN 1290. Any more thoughts on Duncan's thoughts on the power play?
I mean, if they did score more, then, yeah, we wouldn't say anything because they're scoring, right?
And if every day was Christmas, we'd all have all kinds of candies and nuts and everything
else.
Are you concerned?
Like, are you concerned about it, though? And maybe I should be because I know what the numbers are, and I've seen what, you know, how it's been going. I look at it, and I'm like, this thing is going to click eventually.
I don't understand your like, this thing is going to click eventually.
Clicked in the preseason.
Yeah, I might have agreed with you before the Wild game that, you know what, eventually these guys will figure it out, but I don't know the last time I've seen a head scratcher like putting Laine in the middle of the ice there, where he's basically, you've neutered your best offensive weapon on the power play. I don't understand that. And it's not a matter, you cannot give me the argument teams have figured out Patrick Laine on the Jets power play. Because Alex Ovechkin and Steven Stamkos sit on the exact same spot every single night, and they are constantly the leaders in power play goals every single season. Tyler Seguin as well is in the exact same spot.
And if a team's cheating too much over to that side of the ice, that opens up the lanes on the other side, and the right guy on the 1-3-1 over there is going to have more space. Like, all that cheating does towards any of those guys that sit in that island, it just opens up lanes for everybody else on the ice.
To the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
It's Dave.
Dave, you're on the program. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I'm so with Troy on this about being frustrated about this power play and what you guys just mentioned about Ovechkin and Seguin and those guys, Stamkos on that side. Like, if the power play is executed properly, then Laine should be just like these guys. Like, he's got probably the best shot in the NHL. Like, he's definitely as good as Ovechkin's shot. So I just don't understand it. What I'd love to see is somebody actually sit down with Paul Maurice and interview him and ask him and see what his justifications are and reasons for having the people he does on the number one power play and the number two power play. I would think that would be probably one of the most interesting interviews I'd ever hear, because as a hockey fan, and so many hockey fans in the city, is just frustration about the power play, and it seems like everybody can see who should be on the power play, but yet the coach can't see it, or why can't he see it, and what's his justification for it? I'd love to hear that interview.
Well, Dave, sorry to cut you off, but this has been asked all the time, and he has talked about it. Like, he's explained that he likes Wheeler on the one side, he likes Laine on the other. He put Laine in the middle. Like, we get this all the time, and he has okay, been. You don't have to agree with his reasonings or what he is doing with it, but he has explained why he's doing it.
But is it working?
Well, no, I'm not. Fair enough. But what more do you want to be like? You're asking for us to ask him, and I'm just explaining to you. Like, and I know a lot of people don't agree with why he's doing it, and I know a lot of people don't agree with what he's doing on it. But he has explained why he's doing it.
But you know, Dave, I agree with you in that a question could be asked like this: can you please tell me why you don't have your best zone entry guy, your most creative playmaker, on the first team power play? Why are you keeping that piece of the puzzle off of your first-team power play that, by nature, you're hoping will be your most impactful line of your power plays? Like, I would love to hear that answer. I'm right there with you, Dave.
Hey, Mike, let me put you on hold, okay? But, like I say, he has explained that he likes Wheeler to be on that other side. And he likes Laine A over there. And Kyle Connor, he wants Kyle Connor playing with some experienced guys, like the guys, yeah. And he likes to keep that line together.
But
is what he's explained also, is he likes to keep, if Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor are playing together, he likes to keep them together on a power play unit.
Well, it ain't working. So, how long are you going to hang out here? And for the reasons I've listed with Ehlers, it doesn't make sense.
And with their struggles 5-on-5 right now, the Jets, until Lowry and Pro come back, they're going to need the power play. Like, yeah. They're going to need Against Dallas tonight, I know they got the second-rated PK in the NHL, but they might need a couple. Like, if you're only getting one or two even-strength goals a game, you're going to have to make that up somewhere, because at some point, Hellebuck's 940 is going to dip a little bit, and you're going to need one or two power play goals in a game.
Especially I think you when need you're it up regardless. Against the top power play in Dallas. Yeah.
Like, right? Look at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's firing on all cylinders.
But they don't. But they don't have Kucherov on their second unit, right? Like, they load up that first unit.
I don't get the point you're saying. Well, shit, look at Tampa Bay. What are you talking about?
Brandon said, "I think that until they get fully healthy, they need it." And I said, "I think they need it either way, and it should be firing like Tampa Bay does on all cylinders, whether there's injuries or not." Is what I'm saying. Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Who's next?
Mike.
Mike, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, morning, boys. You notice actually the first PK unit that seems to be trotted out now, and I don't think it's any surprise that it's coincided with our success, is actually Scheifele and Wheeler. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, Scheife just played like a beast in that last game, and that one shift that he got all over Suter and then Dumba was just super impressive.
Does anyone remember who was suggesting that before the season started and getting called out a few times?
Might have been some guy named Troy Westwood, mm-hmm. but I've forgotten that. Yeah. I can't remember that far back, buddy.
Might have been, yeah.
But no, it's awesome to see, and he's playing like a beast, and all he got was a butt end of the throat from Suter, that dirty son of a gun. But awesome to see them playing so well.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, the penalty kill has been working well, and as you said, he's brought out Wheeler and Scheifele to augment it as well. The main penalty killers are still out there, and then the second penalty kill unit has become the top-end guys. Yeah.
Well, it has been, and you know what? Having Hendricks and the like as a backup with Tanev, I think, or as a second string kind of, or second unit, I guess. Second string sounds wrong. It's just super powerful, and it's great to see that. But you guys are bang on right. The best penalty killer on the team has been Connor Hellebuck, and I don't think he's going to be able to maintain a .945 save percentage.
Yeah, and specifically, shorthanded, he's at a .914, which is way above average. If he does, let's all hope and pray he does. And you know what, though, guys? This is one interesting thing here, is I wonder, in watching that penalty kill, because it's mystifying, right? Like, it is different, completely different from the other penalty kills that are going on in the NHL, where you see a guy touches a puck in the Jets zone on the power penalty kill, and bam, somebody's out there right away all the time, right? Opposing teams' penalty kills. Watch Dallas tonight. Someone touch it, bam, somebody's there. They disturb it. They don't give them all day. The Jets, it is. I just sit. It makes me lean forward on the couch or in the press. Like, I'm just mystified watching it, and they just have no problem whatsoever with the other team setting up in the perimeter. There were two zone entries against Columbus where the Jets skaters were skating towards their own net, getting ready to collapse, and just allowed entry into the blue line. They weren't even they weren't standing there waiting to oppose it. They just were getting back in their own zones. So it's just astonishing. Like, they, and by nature, I remember before the season started, Paul Murray said that he wanted everyone to collapse low and deep around Connor Hellebuck and get to the rebound. So the emphasis or the focus of their penalty kill seems to be goalie's going to stop the first shot, get on the rebound, get it out of our zone. And, hey, since October 6th here, they are the sixth most effective in the NHL somehow. But we'll see if it – and what a test tonight.
Back to Boss Pizza Fan Line. More calls to get to 780-1290. Go ahead. Or, sorry, who's next?
You know, I actually lost my sheet here, so we'll just get our friendly caller here. Oh, it's Shane. Shane, sorry, Shane.
Shane, you're on the big show. Go ahead, Shane.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about how – something I noticed in the last game was that Wheeler and Scheifele came out on the PK when the second unit of the PP came out, which gave them a way better opportunity to go offense. And it was beautiful to see. I mean, that sauce pass that Scheifele threw.
That was so beautiful, huh? Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that they're almost setting it up so that they can use it as an offensive play at that point. So.
Well, there's no question that they'll give you a better chance to take advantage of those situations than a Matthias Lowry, for instance, right? For sure.
Yeah, so you get the guys that they load up on that first power play, and then you get Scheifele and Wheeler out against their second unit. It's not a bad deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think it's being done because of the lack of depth that's out there right now and the fact that it wasn't working well. So, I mean, if anything's struggling, you put your best players at it. I don't know if it's sustainable throughout the whole season.
That is such an asinine mentality, though. Well, this is the penalty kill. You don't want to use your best players on the penalty kill? You're only doing it because...
Do you want to use your best players or your best penalty killers?
Well, very often the same ones, man.
Well, that's what I just said.
No, it's not what you just said.
I just said, if anything's struggling, you put your best players out to fix it.
But you don't wait for your penalty. Inherently, your best players, your smartest, best players should be on that PK, man. The PK, it's even more important than your power play. Your best players have to be on the PK. And that's another example. And I created that list a couple of weeks ago that the best penalty kills in the NHL are using their best players.
So you believe both penalty kill units should be Scheifele, Wheeler, and Little Ehlers? Those are your best players.
Well, ideally something along those lines would be great, JT, but most certainly your top penalty kill should be players that are very smart, adept out there, fast, all those sorts of things. Now, the interesting thing specifically with the Jets' penalty kill is speed, as far as things defensive, are sort of nullified because they're not pressing anyone. They don't. They give all that stuff up. It's only the speed comes in handy when an opportunity presents itself to go in the other direction. But just puck awareness, stick, all those sorts of things. And inherently, Scheifele and Wheeler are both pretty strong defensive forwards. So it's just fact. Like to think that you don't use your best players for the penalty kill because it's not somehow offensively related, and it doesn't need to be your best specific offensive players. Like, I'm not saying you put up Patrick Laine out there, but your best overall players with the very best hockey sense available, you have to utilize your best talent on penalty kill. You're trying to keep the puck out of your net.
And I think there's been a shift. Or there should be a shift, at least, in how we look at the penalty kill. And I've heard the term high leverage situation before, and it makes a lot of sense to me, right? Because in baseball, there's been kind of a change in the past few years where teams will bring in their closer. And we saw this with Cleveland last year in the World Series, right? Where Andrew Miller would come in the fifth or sixth inning because a team would have runners in scoring position and they needed outs, right? Because you can't afford to give up runs, and so they put their best player out in that specific situation. Well, power play chances are high leverage situations, and goals against are, I think, similar to runs scored in baseball. And if you can prevent that from happening, that's a major mm-hmm. coup for your team. And so in that case, if your best players, if Scheifele and Wheeler are the guys that you can put out there that best prevent those goals from happening, then you have to do that.
And you have to
take those losses somewhere else, whether it's 5-on-5.
Exactly. You go 5-on-5, and that's where you've got to utilize your third and fourth lines, and you try and break even on 5-on-5 situations.
So you want to cut down the top two lines 5-on-5 time in order to get them more PK time.
You have to keep the puck out of your net.
If it means they operate top 10 penalty kill, then yeah, you take that.
This is news out of Denver from the NFL. Brock Osweiler, full circle, will start for the Broncos this weekend. And the interesting part of this is the Cleveland Browns will be paying $895,000-plus of his game check to play for the Broncos. And some celebrating in the Browns front office over that.
You know, why wouldn't the Broncos trade for Jimmy Garoppolo?
And that's a big game against Philadelphia, of course, because I'm looking at our six-pack stuff, and Philly's 7.5-point favorites there, and everyone thinking Philly's going to steamroll the Broncos.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line. We got some more calls here. Actually, we'll take a break, and we'll get to the rest of your calls as we continue here on The Big Show on a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day as we bring you Road Sport, Auto Credit, Jets Hockey, Stars and Jets tonight on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Spread talk off air on the Big Show. Detroit, Green Bay. Tomorrow's six-pack at 8:30 on The Big Show.
I don't know what the deal is with guys like you and Leibel, but both you guys were making our picks, and you guys,
it's the
like
host
your
chair.
Pick. It's like, what's your... I didn't ask you if you liked it or not.
I don't like that pick. I didn't ask if you liked it. Sorry, I thought we were talking. Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Kevin.
Kevin, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, do you guys think we have a little bit of an issue with our second-line center with 5 points, playing with two world-class players, and that's kind of hurting their development?
I don't know about hurting your development. Like,
there's
what?
A lot of fair and little on this team, and 5 points playing with those two players?
Well, and vice versa. Line A's got 6 points in 11 games playing with little.
That's exactly. How would you do it safely?
That's a great question, man, and I'm right there with you. If you're, like, I would rather see Connor, Little, Wheeler, and Line A with Shifley and Ehlers. Why that combo, like, why that's not together? I'm right there with you in what you're getting at.
For me, the whole conversation around the Line A, Ehlers, Little line is just as much about the chemistry and the success the Shifley, Wheeler, Connor line is having. Like, I see the same kind of maybe lack of production from that second line, but I see so much production and chemistry from the first line, I don't know if I want to break that up.
Now, last year when it was the Scheifele, Line A, Ehlers trio, I know Travis Yost did an article about this, but they were one of the best, if not the best, goal-producing lines in the NHL.
Yep.
And now it was limited time together, obviously, but it was still significant enough that it kind of made you go, huh.
Yes.
And I get the point of Wheeler. Like, Wheeler and Shifley do have an innate chemistry between the two players, but I don't know if Wheeler doesn't have chemistry with any guy. Like, I don't know if you put Wheeler with Little.
Of course he has with Little. They've had plenty
of time
together, right?
Yeah, they played three, four years together.
And Connor, too. Like, Connor's success, I think, is a lot of the chemistry I see where, like, they just – for the short time Connor's been on that line, they just go to the right spaces. They know where each other's going to be. Now, would that be the same with mixing it up? Maybe, like you said, Little and Wheeler together, and
they'd be even better. If you Line A, Shifley, and Ehlers is going to be top three lines in the NHL. It's right there. Gives them some time. Let go of the reins and watch it go.
Kind of like the intimidation factor too. If you're on the opposing team and those three step out onto the ice, and if you're, I don't know, if you're Montreal, for example, and you got that aging blue line, we got to keep up with these cats.
Mm-hmm. Mother.
You would like to see it broken up, Kevin, or I assume Kevin would.
He's gone.
Yes.
Let's squeeze Bryce in quick.
Bryce, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Bryce.
Hey, guys. I don't have much time, so I just want to quickly say I'm really happy. The Astros won. I'm not really an Astros fan. I just really love seeing big city teams like Los Angeles, Chicago, New York lose. I think when you spend $250 million a year on a team and you're not winning championships, I love seeing that because you're trying to buy your championship, and I absolutely hate that. And I don't know why we're all, year in, year out, we're so befuddled on why our power play and PK is so bad. Paul Maurice has historically had really, really bad special teams. It's not going to get better this year.
Well, the PK isn't bad. The PK is pretty high right now.
Well, it's 15th. Best it's ever been.
Yeah.
For a long time, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially power play. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing running that power play, I don't think. Like, I think there's so many better options and where we would place players. Like, placing Line A in the middle, again, is just getting desperate like he was doing last year when he put Line A on the top right side, not on his on his wing. I think it's just a desperation move, and I think I like Byfuglien, okay? But if we have Byfuglien just ripping shots at that top point, going over the net, it's never, ever going to get better. He needs to learn how to pass puck to Line A more specifically. I just hope we can get it going here, because the way we're winning isn't sustainable. Hellebuck isn't going to win us every single game this year. Thanks, guys.
Good stuff, Bryce. We appreciate the time and the call on the Boss Pizza fan line. It is a Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Winnipeg Jets game day. The afternoon ride live from Boston Pizza City Place at 3. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from BP City Place at 6. And then we have Road Sport Auto Credit Jets Hockey at 7. Jets and Stars and the Huron Windows postgame show will wrap it all up for you. We'll wrap it up for you and get into the weekend. And, of course, the Bomber game in Calgary on tomorrow's show. Show. We appreciate all the calls and tweets and texts and opinions. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. And the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.